possibly live from the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center in Trophy Club, Texas. It's the definitive independent podcast covering the 2011 world champion Dallas Mavericks. Hold on to the past, baby. It's the Mavericks Outsider Report. I am Rylan Rowe. I do sports. With me, as always, far more important to the proceedings, is the man at the helm, the mild-mannered reporter, balling with Brian, Mr. Brian Gutierrez of ESPN True Hoops, the two-man game, ESPN Dallas, and basically every outlet near you. We're here to commence episode 76?
76.
76, baby. What is today, August 18th?
Yeah.
Sunday, August 18th, 2013, year of the Mayan plus one.
Sunday fun day.
Sunday fun day is upon us. We're going to be talking Mavs. It's been a while. Busyness.
The kids say it's been a minute.
And business has been upon us.
Is it business or business?
Business, busyness. It's all been upon us. We haven't had a chance to get together. But now we're back. We got time to, which is good because a lot of things have happened since we last talked. Last time we talked was literally right when the chit-chatting period of NBA free agency had opened up. And, well, that ended.
It's done.
We've now built out a roster. I'm having trouble with my height on my chair, bro.
That's a problem.
Oh, how's that?
I'm stuck with
it. Look okay? Straight? Good? Okay. So.
It's all good. It's all good.
So there's a lot to get down to, man.
This is the conflict resolution episode.
This is the conflict resolution episode because Judgment Day came and went. We can now pass judgment. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about what Cuban had to say about it, which has been a lot.
He said a lot.
And we've got a lot to get into there.
He's typed a lot.
Obviously, there's X's and O's that need to be broken down as it relates to who's been signed and the guys that are going to be in the uniform and actually play basketball. Brian went to Summer League. We got to talk
about
Summer
League.
Summer camp for media nerds.
Yeah.
The Mavs have a new general manager. I mean, just
randomly one day.
Shit's just been flying everywhere.
Got a new manager, general manager.
Cuban's been on the Tonight Show. We're going to talk about that because of some of the sports-centric things he discussed there. What else?
The media landscape of the DFW area is rapidly changing.
If you're a media sports radio nerd like we are, and a lot of our listeners probably are, there's a lot of stuff to talk about there. And I have an announcement to make towards the end of the show.
Oh, boy.
Very special announcement. So there's that and a lot of stuff. So I guess without further ado, Brian, Judgment Day.
Jibber jabber.
Intro jibber jabber.
In that jibber jabber.
And Judgment Day.
So are you, I guess my immediate question would be, are you okay? Based off of everything that's happened, are you okay?
I'm okay because nothing happened that we didn't expect to happen a month ago when we talked, or I guess it's been like 5 weeks now, but simultaneous water drinking is always good for audio presentations. I'm fine, and I'm fine because the ultimate outcome of what happened for the Mavs.
Well, what happened was
it proved to me what I think we already knew, which is that our front office is capable of maximizing their opportunity as it relates to whatever their strategy is. And just what you saw over the last two off seasons prior to this one was a different strategy than you'd ever seen before. And that strategy was about, we're going to maintain cap space. And then you saw the things that they acquired relative to that. We felt like at the time, they did as well as they could have been expected to do in the parameters that they put on themselves. But they put themselves into a box, and then that box ate them. So now, having moved on from that strategy, we're kind of back to the traditional Dallas Mavericks team building, granted under a new CBA.
Right.
So there's some subtleties, and you know, down the road we can talk about that and how they're going to do things differently. But it's back to the asset management over cap space mentality, and within that frame of mind, they acquitted themselves quite well.
I think I agree with that. I think the only major surprise was Monte Ellis coming in the mix. I know on the last episode we did, Skin and Falwell really had to sell us, and they just knew what was going on, basically. They could see into the future, and they were...
Well, they're way smarter than we are.
They are.
Both of them.
But they were really carrying that flag of saying Monte Ellis is probably going to be a good fit for this team, or he has the potential to be a fit, and he ended up surprising everyone by coming to the Mavericks, because probably 3 days before, Donnie Nelson said, probably don't count on this happening, but it ended up happening.
Well, you know, he was somebody that I was not in favor of, and then when both of those guys were separately and simultaneously in favor of it, I needed to reevaluate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so stubborn. I'm pretty damn stubborn, but I'm not so stubborn as when multiple people who I generally agree with all disagree with me. I go, okay, well, let me reevaluate, you know, and after talking to them and talking to you and thinking about it and reading Twitter and reading stats and just thinking about my brain in basketball that's stored inside my brain area, I came to terms with it. Is there a potential, and we can talk about this when we talk about Monte, but is there a potential for that to not possibly work out?
Sure,
absolutely. We'll get into that. But it's better. It's better than what I think we thought was going to happen prior to them signing him. So yeah, to answer your question, I'm okay because I'm okay. Now, that being said, passing judgment on the plan failed.
Yeah.
Plan went down in flames.
It did.
Plan went down in flames. The biggest argument that I had, and who else made? I can't remember who it was that was really making this argument at the time. On the radio, but somebody was, and it was about, hey, look, there's a phasing in of this draconian luxury tax, so why don't you phase out your payments instead of cutting it all off to spite your face at the beginning of this thing?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think Cuban outsmarted himself a little bit just because he got ahead of the curve, and it ultimately, had they done what they needed to do with Tyson Chandler and then traded a Sean Marion type, they wouldn't have been in luxury tax hell.
Yeah.
They would have more or less been where they ended up now, cap-wise, after filling up the roster. You know, more or less. Maybe within a few million here or there. Maybe you've paid a little, and obviously it would have been extra tax paid the last 2 years. But I think that, generally speaking, that the fact that Chandler's been mostly healthy those 2 years, I mean, he had some problems this past year,
mm-hmm.
I think most people would look back on that and say, that would have been the best way to ride the fence. Let Terry go, even letting Kidd walk after that horrible lockout year, you know, but taking your lumps with Tyson, giving him more or less the same deal that New York gave him, and they could have given him an extra year being his current team, but they probably didn't have to have him sign here, you know. Having done that, they could have just ridden the fence a little bit. All those other contracts would have been coming off the books, Marion being the big one, and if you don't want to set yourself up for being a repeater right off the bat, they could have found a way to move him, even if it was for nothing.
At that point, he would have been flippable.
Yeah, so that's if I had to go back in time, I would do that, and so, yes, it failed miserably, but it's over. It's behind us now. I have faith that Dirk, healthy Dirk, is going to turn into Robot Dirk again.
Robo.
He's going to be Robo Dirk. He's not going to be early 30s Robo Dirk, but he's going to be mid-30s Robo Dirk, and that's still better than a lot of guys in the league, and I think that's going to be a big, big turning point for the Magic this year. I need to quit playing with this pen.
Kind of analyzing it in a big-picture perspective, the way I've kind of looked at it is that Cuban and the Mavs organization was on the fast track with trying to get the CBA resolved, but I think the Houston Rockets were like in the HOV lane. They just kind of zoomed by everybody.
Not only did they zoom by everybody, but they zoomed by everybody to get where they needed to go, but they did it without jettisoning all of their assets on day one.
Right.
I don't know. I just think, and I'll talk about this more later when we talk about Cuban's reaction specifically in the next segment, but the dude is obviously super smart, and I am always interested in what he has to say, and I'm a big fan of what he does and how he does his job, but I think he just outsmarted himself. I think he just got really passionate about this path, and I think they really thought that Williams, Howard, and Paul were all going to come free all in the same summer, and it would have been a battle of attrition, and no matter what, one of them mm-hmm. was going to end up in your lap, and you would have made do no matter what. And asset-wise, you would have been better off going forward with that than what you would have had if you kind of stayed the course, if you will. And
it was trending that way, too.
But it's like they just forgot that guys can get traded.
Right.
It's like they forgot about the fact that guys can get traded, even though all they've ever done is trade for guys.
And then they forgot about how draft picks are valuable.
Yeah, well, obviously that, too. You know, so, yeah, I think it just was real. I think that Mark Cuban in his life has made billions of dollars zigging when everybody else zags, and we only hear about the successes. You can't zig. If you always zig when everyone else zags, that's great. I'm that way sometimes too. But you also screw up and fail. It's just when you're a billionaire, those don't make the biography in your Wikipedia page. You know,
we
only hear about broadcast.com. We don't hear about, you know, wetfarts.com or whatever else. I mean, you know, everybody has failures. So this was a pretty big one, and it sucks. But I'm glad we're moving on.
I'm gonna have to look into wetfarts.com. I'm not really sure about that. We've started to talk about Cuban a little bit. We're gonna take a break right now, and we're gonna dig into a little bit more of what Cuban has said since Judgment Day has come and gone, and he's definitely said a whole lot.
Skynet just blew up every human in America.
It went to wetfart.com.
And the world.
So we're going to talk about that after the break. Maverick's Outsider Report, Ted Jones, Broadcasting Center.
Yup. It's going to be a quick break, Brian.
Are you going to tell the truth?
We're going to stay on time. We have decided...
I'm surprised you were the one that did that.
That implemented this? Yes. For the first time in the 2+ year, we're almost up to 3 years, dude.
Pounded.
Yeah.
Bam.
In the three nearly year history, we'll come up to 3 years of our first podcast together, not MOR, coming up like in like two or three weeks. It was like the first week of September.
I think so.
Right after Labor Day. But anyway, the first time in that whole period, we're implementing an actual clock.
I think we've talked about it, but we haven't really.
You can see it if you're a Ustreamer. You can see my big font.
Your big clock.
Yeah, right here. You can see it. You can also see, I want to apologize to the Ustreamers. So in the 2.0 version of the TJBC, we have a deeper room. So I've got a camera that's further back, which makes it's a better way to do this. But I've got a really long USB cable that requires a repeater to support the length, and it causes a synchronization issue between the audio and the video. So the video is just slightly behind the audio, but I'm going to get a different cable and find a way just to move it just close enough that I don't need a repeater. I think that's what's causing it, but whatever.
I smell a Christmas present.
Suck it up, man. Suck it up. It's free. Mavericks Outsider Report, episode 76. We're back. We're talking about Judgment Day on Planned Powder. Planned Powder blew up like gunpowder. It was not, of course, I guess the analogy was gunpowder to begin with.
Kapow.
Damn it. But anyway, it kind of blew up in everybody's face. We're picking up the pieces and moving on. We talked about our personal reactions in the opening segment, and we want to take a nice long chunk of time here to talk about Mark Cuban and what he had to say about it. And he has not been short for words on this topic, has he, bud?
He is not. He's talked to whoever has wanted to talk to him.
Like, you know, I could probably just go, like, find him at Whole Foods, and he'd probably talk for 15 minutes about it.
Do you think he goes to Whole Foods, or he has someone go to Whole Foods?
I bet it's a mix.
Is he that kind of guy?
I bet it's a mix. I bet he kind of does a little, maybe not regularly himself, because I'm sure he's got a pretty tight schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that if the opportunity requires it and he needs to run down the street to pick something up at the grocery store, it seems like he would do that. I mean, he took the picture. You saw the picture of his office with the Larry O'Brien trophy, mm-hmm. and his office was just messy as shit. I mean, that's a hallmark of a normal guy. So
your office is very clean.
I'm a neat freak, though. You know, everybody's like me. There's neat freaks. There's middle grounders. There's messy people. Most people are in the middle. I'm in the neat category. So
okay.
I'm just honest about who I am, brother.
Whether it's online, whether it's articles, whether it's blog posts, Cuban has basically been an open book and relaying his point of view. And this is something he actually said prior to the end of last season, was saying that there would be as much transparency as possible while legally possible based on the rules. Maybe they couldn't divulge who they're going to be talking to during free agency. You going Dirk right now?
I'm Dirking it
okay,
right now.
That's cool. Be careful. That would have been when keeping it Dirk goes wrong. But anyways, he made it a point to say whenever the situation would come across, he would lay all the cards out on the table, and he's done that through multiple avenues.
And you know, he's got a history of doing that throughout his entire ownership tenure, so it doesn't surprise me. You know, I mean, he even did it. If you remember, did you go to the thing that they had for season ticket holders right after the lockout ended? The thing that Mark Folliwell,
no,
for those of you who aren't on a first name basis with him, like I am.
There's a lot of Marks.
He moderated a season ticket holder forum, and it was really a small, like, I mean, maybe 150 people were there. Boogie Bob and Don Knobler and me and
dang, dude,
all the hot shots.
Dang.
But anyway, he was an open book there too. Mm-hmm. So he's got a history of that. That's part of why he's a good owner. That's part of why I'm a loyal customer to the Dallas Mavericks Basketball LTD. He did this really in two main salvos that I had in my notes, and you probably have some other stuff too. But didn't he meet up with some of you guys, run across some of you guys in Vegas?
Yes.
So y'all had a nice long conversation there, which ended in another resulting comment from the article that, did you write it? You and Tim together, Tim McMahon?
This is me and Tim.
You and Tim published
together. We're going to go into that detail a little bit more.
There's that, which we want to hit, and then he posted Jamie Newberg is jealous about how many words this blog had in it. He had a long, long blog post on blogmaverick.com, which I didn't even read all of. I scanned it mainly because I kind of knew what he was saying, you know?
Did you see the video?
Oh, I didn't want to watch that.
You didn't want to?
No,
So to this day, you haven't watched the video?
The Dwight Howard video? No.
Wow.
I want to watch. I'm a big fan of what the creative team does over there. Mm-hmm.
Cash Arroyo, all of those.
Yes,
rules.
Cash, who we had on our show. And they're always fun, and I enjoy them during the games. But I don't want to see one of a guy that's not on my team. I mean, look, I'm a Dallas Mavericks fan. I've talked about this before.
You're that song.
I'm that song. I don't give a damn about you if you're on another team. Except for when we do NBA Nuggets. Then I give a damn about everybody. All right, bro, what do you got about Vegas? I mean, how did this come about? You guys are milling around, and
do you want to talk about this now, or do you want to do it in the Vegas section?
Let's do it now, but okay. Just that little bit, because it's really relevant to what he had to say about Plan Powder.
This was during either the second or third Summer League game, and Dwayne Price, the only people representing...
Of all time.
The only people really representing the Mavs in Vegas, I can't hear myself, there it is, were myself, Earl K. Sneed of Mavs.com, and Dwayne Price of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. That's your group right there.
Is that fun hanging?
It was fun. Randomly, I see Dwayne tweeting some quotes from Cube, and I'm like, what the heck? Dwayne, if you don't follow Dwayne, he randomly tweets.
His Twitter game is something else.
It's not necessarily the sharpest Twitter game, but it can be effective.
He gets things other people don't get.
Yes.
How about that? He does.
That's true.
And I'll give him that.
Sometimes
I'll give him
he has quotes that are really delayed sometimes. Yeah. So I was like,
I feel like, I don't know. Anyway, go ahead.
I was like, when I saw these, I was like, what is he doing? What's going on? And then I started to look around, and people were milling around saying Cuban's in the building. I was like, okay, I got to keep an eye out. And I'm trying to keep an eye on the game, too. And I'm texting Tim, because I'm doing work for ESPN Dallas, and he's like, if you see him, go find him, do whatever you got to do. If he goes in the bathroom, go follow him in the bathroom.
You said that to Tim, or
no,
Tim said that to you?
He's basically paraphrasing. You got to find him. If you find him, talk to him. That's more important than the game. So I ended up finding him because I'm looking around, and I see him up in the stands hanging with Michael Finley and some other Mavs personnel people. And I run up the stands, go talk to him for about 5 or 10. It was like more like 7 or 8 minutes talking about basically a variety of topics. And the Q&A actually went on the Mavs blog, but the juicy
– Stevens.
No, he was not there. Neither was
Rod
the
White.
No, definitely not.
J.J. Barrera.
No, that would have been fun if he was there, though. The Q&A went on the Mavs blog, but obviously the juicy stuff from Cuban saying basically that they're better off without Dwight Howard.
His exact quote, we are better off.
Right.
We are better off. Continue.
His
quote.
That
his words.
That basically big chunk of gold ended up on ESPNDallas.com. I wrote that article, sent all the quotes off to Tim, and he's like, wait, is this really what he said? And then I was like, yeah.
Did you have audio or just talking?
Yeah, I had audio.
Boom.
And so you're like, I sent that in.
You're like, bro, I got proof.
I got proof, and then he's like, okay, I got to get to work on this.
What were the dates on that?
I got it pulled up.
Like July 12th or something?
July 18th.
Okay.
Ish.
Okay.
16, 17, 18th-ish.
Okay, I'm trying to get to my tweets about it.
So I send in the stuff to Tim, and then he replies back immediately, and he's like, or actually he calls me, and he says, dude, did he really say this stuff?
Two guys in their early 30s used a phone and not a text. You knew it was important.
Yes. So I had again, I'm not paying attention to this game that I'm supposed to be covering.
Eh.
So I have to go into the tunnel, and he's like, dude, replay, look at what he said again in this graph and make sure this is what he said. And I said, okay, I'll call you back. So I called him back, confirming it, and he's like, okay, I got to get to work. So he basically liked that part, basically saying that we're better off without Dwight. And then we went back and forth on looking at the article in question that was written. And then, boom, it's written. And I'm like, okay, that's sweet. I'm going to keep going being in Vegas. And then the next day I keep on getting these text messages. This thing is blowing up.
Yeah, it blew up the next day.
Like, I found out it blew up on Mike and Mike, the early ESPN morning show, nationally syndicated. Then ESPN Dallas Radio had it all day long. So it was clearly a big deal.
And then Cuban came back after the story was published and got talked about at that level. And what he basically said, to paraphrase, is he said, we're better off that this happened. We're in a better place. We're in a better position to go acquire better players to fill out the roster, which is true. The thing that most people took issue with and why it became a big story was because he used the term better off to evaluate their position.
Mm-hmm.
That's patently wrong.
Right.
Because if you believe that, then you picked the wrong plan from the get-go, and you change, which we know he doesn't think he picked the wrong plan, as we will cover here in a moment when we talk about his blog. So he says this, and then he accuses you guys of headline porn, quote, headline porn.
Right.
He even tweeted about headline porn.
Mm-hmm.
It's not headline porn if it's a quote that came out of your mouth, bro. I love you. You're smart. Thank you for being the owner of my favorite basketball team, but that's bullshit, brother. That's not headline porn. It's headline porn if somebody takes something out of context.
This is true.
And I understand what he's saying. Believe me, it's out there. It's very popular. We both know it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's a media critic.
It happens.
Some people are media watchdogs.
Some are.
Wink, wink.
Some are, some aren't.
But come on, man. If you have an exact quote that's not taken out of context, I'm here to tell you, Brian Gutierrez is not taking you out of context. This brother's mild-mannered reporter. So he talked himself into a corner.
Mm-hmm.
He can't admit.
It's just my casual approach that got him off. He was like,
he just got him off guard. He can't admit without a little bit of spin. He's a salesman by nature. That's fine. He has to give that little bit of spin. He can't admit in direct, open, black and white language what a cluster it ended up being. So he has to couch it, and he does it in such a way that he is saying an accurate thing, which is that basically what he was saying is, look, our sixth man, seventh man, and eighth man are going to be 10 times better than they would have been if we had gotten Dwight Howard or Chris Paul or whatever. Yeah, that's obvious. We've been talking about that with Miami for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
We know that to be the case. And I appreciate him wanting to make that point. But you can't make that point after making a summary statement that says we are better off. That means what it means. You can't change the meaning of those words. Those words mean what they mean. Gavel, hashtag, end of story. So, no, Mark, it was not headline porn. But, dude, good for you that you got to get a co-credit on that story, because that thing blew up, and I was very, very entertained by not only the actual story, which is interesting, but everything, how big it got and stuff.
And you know me. I'm the kind of guy that likes to make sure everything is copacetic and no one is ruffled.
And he's not the type to get ruffled.
No.
He's a lot like Jerry Jones. You know, Ben, our buddy Ben Rogers of Ben and Skin Show on 105.3
The Fan. Dropper.
He has been saying this about Jerry a lot now that they're on the flagship over there, is that Jerry's Teflon Jerry. He doesn't care when people talk about him. He eats it up. I don't think Mark's quite on that level, but it's a similar kind of deal, which is, look, I'm a made man, for starters. Secondly, it's my job to be out in front of the public. I'm the face of the franchise when it comes to selling it to the customers. So it is what it is. And so I don't think, unless you're just really, really, he'll get sideways with people, but you have to kind of either strike a nerve very specific with him, or just be a real dick, which obviously you've never done either of those. So.
But we talked, I think it was like a day or so after the article came out, and we just real quick emails exchanged back and forth, having a laugh about it, because my dad likes to keep track of basketball, but he doesn't really, really know what's going on, but he saw the stuff. And then he heard Cuban's comment about headline porn. He's like, is Cuban going to be mad at you? Because that's my dad.
The funny thing was the replies on Twitter that people thought Cuban was talking about porn.
Oh.
Like, bounce, wow, porn. I can't remember if he was retweeting him or just some smartass that we follow was retweeting all these responses to Mark Cuban about porn. I mean, it was hilarious.
I missed that part.
Yeah, so...
Wow.
So then he follows this up with like a 9,000-word blog.
I don't think it was 9,000.
It was big, though.
I think it was like 3,000 to 4,000.
He emptied it out, man. He went from start to finish. He basically traced all the way back to, you know, the offseason following the championship.
Before the championship.
And we have... Oh, yeah, you're right. Going from before the championship all the way forward. And it's all a lot of topics that we've covered. We've covered here. We've talked to people about it on this show. And he basically just laid it all out in the...
Here it is.
This is what we wanted to do. This is what we didn't want to do. Here's why. You know, like I told you, I didn't read the whole thing, but I felt like it was sort of a compilation of all of the little things he's told people over the last couple years. He put it all together. He narrated it out in chronological order. And you really got to see, you know, how one event led to another event led to another event. And there was a... there was a tweet that said that it was reactionary, that the front office appeared to be reactionary at this point. And,
with the blog post?
No, with the moves that they had made to fill out the roster, that it had become a reactionary front office. And I agree with that only because in that context, you're reacting to the fact that your plan didn't work.
Yeah, what do you expect?
You have to be reactionary.
Yeah.
So that's true, and it's accurate, and it's not so much that I would have a problem with it in this case, but, you know, I would if it was a year-to-year thing. If it was a Jerry Jones reactionary draft a wide receiver every other year type of deal.
Sure.
What did you take away from that blog post that was the biggest, surprise takeaway? Anything new?
I don't think there was a major takeaway.
It was mostly stuff we had heard already. I just thought it was cool that he sat down and put it all in one big giant, you know.
The transparency was the big thing, which a lot of people just don't do.
I don't really think anybody does.
In his position, they clearly don't do it, but it's, I think I mentioned it on Twitter or in one of the articles I wrote, that the main word I caught from everyone, like national writers or whoever that read his blog post, they had the same reaction, that it's fascinating. That it's fascinating that someone in his stature, who clearly doesn't have to answer to anyone, really. He can't. He does with his season ticket holders.
That's how he looks at it.
Yeah.
And that's why it is fascinating, is because he takes the opportunity to be different and be unique in that way. And really, he's letting you in on probably what amounts to like 90% of his entire thought process.
Yeah.
There's still some things, you know, he's playing close to the vest on and not letting out. But a lot of the basic structure of the thought process is in there. And I think it's a big benefit to people who follow the team, people who cover the team, you know, everybody.
It basically says that we're not talking out of our ass, basically.
Yeah.
If it's happening, there's a purpose.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah. And a lot of teams, you kind of don't get that picture. You kind of think, okay, well, they're just flying by the seat of their pants. But this shows that while they've had to do that along the way, there is a thought process and a picture that they've been trying to follow, or a goal. And he just lays it out all out on the table.
If you have any remaining questions, go back and read it. Absolutely, yeah. Go back and read it. Yeah. And it's interesting because it's out there. I wouldn't put it past him to go back and edit it, so print it off. Print it off, save it, and then, you know, come back in the future if you want to call him out on anything that he changes his mind on. But definitely a fascinating read. Cuban ever the spinster. Not admitting defeat. Do you think he admitted defeat before we go? Did he really admit defeat?
I don't think he did.
I don't know that he's capable of it.
I think,
and that's one of the things, one of the few things I'll kind of ride him about.
I don't think he really did, but he said it just didn't work out.
Yeah, he didn't, but it's so obvious. It's kind of like you know.
I just saw, I actually have the blog post up, and I saw at the bottom he does have an update.
Uh-oh.
It appears that most Mavs fans are aware that...
Told you he'd edit it.
No, he didn't. that the video in the Howard presentation was only 2 minutes of a three-hour meeting and was supposed to inject some fun and demonstrate some of the marketing we put behind our players in an arena. My bad for not anticipating that the mindless would focus on it as the foundation of our presentation. So that's kind of like, that was one of the big things out of the blog post was like, dude, this video is, some people were saying it's lame or it's whatever. Is he supposed to really buy joining the Mavericks based off of this two-minute video?
Of course not. Don't be a dumbass.
Right. But he ended up saying, I wish I could share the presentation with you, but in the day and age, it would be fodder for headline porn. And not looked at for what it is.
Did he say headline porn?
Yes. It's not worth the hassle.
You have birthed a new phrase, brother. Revolutionary talk on Mavericks Outsider Report. We're going to take a break and come back and talk about filling out the roster.
There's a roster.
There was not much of one last time we talked. So
no.
We're going to cover that next. All right, dude, we're back. Mavericks Outsider Report.
You almost ran off with your headphones on.
I almost got up with my headphones on because I'm just so dedicated. Oh, hey, Joe Walsh. Hang on. Bro, I just saw something on my TV.
Fox Sports 1?
Well, no, I had it on Fox Sports Southwest because the Rangers were finishing up, choking up on their own spit before you came over.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's still on the TV's still there because I'm home alone like Macaulay Culkin. And what?
Uh-oh.
I just saw a commercial for LED clothes.
Yeah.
And sunglasses.
Oh, that's a commercial?
A commercial
wow.
for LED,
mm-hmm.
who is one of your in-game MCs at the American Airlines Center for Mavs fans, for clothes and sunglasses. And she's singing. So she's promoting her song and trying to sell clothes.
We're going off the clock for sure now.
No, we're just going to have to cut this one short because I don't understand, man. Like,
what don't you understand? Help you understand what?
Help me understand. Like, I don't know. Like, what?
She can't be an entrepreneur?
That all takes money. Where's it coming from? MC and AAC is not a lucrative gig.
She's a country singer.
No, she's not. She's somebody with some shit on iTunes like my friend Brady Davis and my friend Jake Robinson and my friend Brian Webb and all these other people.
You got a lot of friends.
I got a lot of musician friends and I'm not musical enough to hang with them. That's
but she's parlayed.
You don't make money on
she's
that.
Parlayed that Mavs stuff into her career.
Brian,
I don't know how much
you can't parlay that income.
I don't know. You don't know.
I want to know who's. I want to know who her sugar daddy is. I need a sugar mama.
She was on TV too, with
a
that,
reality show, which was like the worst show. Thing that was ever on TV.
Was that on CMT?
It was somewhere. We watched like 10 minutes of it.
I don't
kind
remember.
Of as a just like hey, there's a. Dallas thing.
But there's
terrible.
That too. So.
Oh, it was terrible.
So
you should probably got paid for that, but who produced that?
I don't know,
man. Anyway, I'm questioning this whole endeavor. Real quick before we move on, my man Zombie Frog on the chat over here says to us, if we had signed Howard, we'd have a team that can't get the ball to Dirk or Howard.
That's true.
Absolutely true.
Well,
it's a problem you learn to deal with, but it's true.
I've always had this inkling that because we're going to get into Calderon in a second. I think Calderon was plan A and plan B for them. If at that point Howard comes to the Mavs, they're going to Jose Calderon and saying, hey, do you want to spend your last 3 or 4 years playing a little bit less money, but you're playing giving the ball to Dwight Howard and Dirk Nowitzki?
Yep.
And I would think at that point he says, yep. Sign me up.
I kind of thought the same thing. So let's go ahead and get into
that. That would have been incredibly scary if that did not happen.
Building the roster, now that we've broken down LED's funding sources, we've got...
Maybe it's a Ponzi.
Hell, I don't know, dude. I don't know. It's just weird to me. Anyway...
Where are we starting? Calderon?
We might as well go in chronological order, and Calderon was the first major domino to fall.
He was the one... He was outside of CP3, he was the point guard I wanted to see on the Mavericks the most. It just made the most sense because you saw last year what happened with Darren Collison, Derek Fisher, and Mike James.
This guy, from an execution standpoint, is the diametric opposite of that.
Not sucking.
And a lot of people on Twitter kind of threw their hands up and cried and everything because of the length of the deal. It was a 4-year deal?
Yes.
No yeah,
options on the deal.
Maybe that's a year too long, but, you know, You got to do what you got to do. It's time to start.
4 years, 29
mil. It's time to start playing in with the market a little bit. You can't beat the market on every deal every time. It's not terrible. The year-to-year money on it is okay. Doesn't bother me. A lot of people pissed and moaned about his defense, and I agree. He's not going to guard anybody, but nobody guarded anybody last year.
It's true.
It's a net improvement. We need net improvement here. We had a lot of holes to fill. One of the major themes of the last show we did when we were anticipating what was going to happen was the simple fact that there were so many holes to fill on this roster. When you got that many holes to fill, you can't be 100% pleased with 100% of every guy's game.
Beggars can't be
that
choosers.
You signed. And in terms of the most glaring needs that the Mavs had, and you'll hear it when Rick talks, when Donnie talks, even when Mark talks about, and definitely you hear it from Dirk too. The guard play last year was so abysmal, it torpedoed any chance that thing had of gelling and turning into anything that might be even close to resembling overachievement. So I was on board the same reasons you were, and I think he's a good fit, and I'm happy Devin Harris is back in the fold and for super cheap. That first deal on him was even a great deal.
I think it was three for nine. Yeah,
3 for 9.
That's incredible.
What's the deal? Like, did he just really, really want to be back here?
He really did.
That's
want to
the
come
vibe
back
I got off of him. I'm a little concerned about the fact now. Obviously, he's going to be out for a little bit because he had to have some toe surgeries.
Oh, my toe. Coach, my toe.
And so they re-signed him to a one-year deal. They avoided the original deal, or it didn't get full signed all the way. I guess so, physical or whatever. So but I'm a little concerned that it's just 1 year.
That's the only downside of this, because the first deal, like you talked about, 3 for 9, was an incredible bargain.
That's such an incredible bargain. The toe must be a legitimate concern.
Right.
That's the only thing. Nobody's playing it like that now. You're not hearing that. You're not really. Everybody's just like, okay, surgery, we're going to rehab it, and he'll be back very early in the year, if not right as the season starts. But for them to have a great deal, 3 for 9, and turn it into a 1 year deal, obviously there's got to be concerns about the toe. That's the only example.
Well,
only reason.
I think CBA perspective wise, you can only go 1 to 2 years on a min deal. You can't go 3.
Sure, but again.
Yeah, but at that point.
The fact that that's happening has to indicate that there's some concern that he's not going to get right after this.
I think they have to know, and he has to know, that his history in the NBA has been mired with lots of injury concerns.
Yeah.
He's had injury of bugaboo basically across his career, and that's kind of the thing that derailed him. Or one of the things that derailed him in his first stint with Dallas, he would show so much potential, but then he'd have something with his, his foot or whatever. Something would come up. But I think the situation worked out for him because he got to be where he wanted to be. It worked out for Dallas incredibly because they got him originally at a great value, but even more
created
so
created a little more room for this year, which helped them on other deals.
Right.
Made them more attractive to Monte Ellis. By $1.5 million, give or take.
The only part that sucks is that it's going to hurt after this year, trying to figure out how to make it work. Because if he plays well,
mini exception.
Yeah, you kind of have to hope that
2.5 or whatever.
Yeah,
or something like that. If he wants to be here enough to accept 3 for 9, and you got to think somebody somewhere would have given him 2 years after this.
Yeah,
you got to think. I don't know. Maybe not.
He just really wanted to come back.
Maybe his leg is going to fall off, and I'm wrong.
Coach, my leg fell off. Get back in there, Harris.
I had a quote from Dirk that I marked off, favorited a tweet from a long time ago.
What do you got over there?
That I got notes, bro.
Dang, man.
So,
you're prepared.
Very little. It was like 5 minutes. I started doing it at 5:55. or 5:53. Anyway, there was a tweet, and it came from Mark Folliwell, and it was a quote where someone had asked Dirk, are you hoping that anyone from this year's team, last year's team, returns to assist with chemistry? In the context of there's going to be a lot of new guys, wouldn't it help to have some holdovers for chemistry purposes? Dirk's quote was, I think the team's going to look a lot different next year.
I think the team's going to look a lot different.
I think, in summary, as we talk about the rest of these dudes, Dirk is just happy because the other guys are gone.
He said, this team sucks.
We talked about it at the end of last year, how frustrated he seemed on the bench, man. He just looked pissed, and I looked pissed, and everybody looked pissed. And I just think
Allie
that
D looked pissed.
She looked mad. She was, like, designing a T-shirt that said, I'm country with a K. or something and trying to sell it to people. I think that this is a Dirk friendly situation, you know, with the exception of there not being a super awesome defensive beast in the middle. But before we get to the Monte Ellis, who I think is kind of the biggest name here and the biggest change to this whole situation, mm-hmm. let's cover what is going to go down in the middle. To me, there's two guys that were signed, but there's also another one we got to remember and mention, which is Brandon Wright. Mavs were able to pick up Sam Dallenberg from the Bucks on a free agent deal. Dewan Blair came in at the very last minute after they flirted with Greg Oden, and thankfully he put a ring on it with Miami.
Miami put a ring
he
on it.
He followed Josh Hamilton's lead and asked someone to put a ring on it. And
you
then,
and that pen.
I know, dude. This is why I don't use pens. I'm like ADD. And then Brandon Wright hung around. And once the cap situation got figured out, he came in and got a deal. And
2 for 10.
The quote that Mark Folliwell gave on Twitter was, he did the Mavs a solid. And I favorited that tweet because I wanted to make sure that we mentioned that. And he did. He got a good deal. Mm-hmm. I think he got a fair deal. I think it's good for both sides. Good value. We've talked before about his limitations. And there's always a chance he can outgrow some of them. But regardless, Mavs needed help down there. He represents that. He's been good. I think the fact that he was willing to wait on the cap situation to shake out. You know, in the past we've talked about him and Rick seeing eye to eye. You know how he'd go into the doghouse for like 6 weeks at a time and just barely even sniff the court.
He lost out minutes to Troy Murphy.
I was always concerned that that meant that there was like a headbutting going on that might be an unproductive headbutting. I think this proves it was a productive headbutting. And that, again, testament to Rick Carlisle on that one. So, Brandon Wright's in the mix at center. Your starting center, Sam Dallenberg, he only played 16 minutes last year a game, which is concerning to me. He's not that old for a big man.
32.
For a big man?
That's not bad.
No.
What is bad is he played five teams in 5 years.
Of course. And why did he only play 16 minutes last year? Just because Larry Sanders is that much better?
Larry Sanders.
Which we know he's better. I mean, I'm not asking that question seriously.
Jury's still kind of out on that. I'm not sure.
But still.
I think it was coaching philosophy, kind of butt heads over there. And he's like, I want to be in Miami. Because I think he even alluded to that in the first round against the Heat. He was like, yeah, I wouldn't mind playing with the Heat next year. And I'm down 3-0 to him. So I think he just kind of was checking out. I think he knew his free agent, ready to go somewhere else. But he gives the Mavs what they need if he plays up to par. Because they saw last year that Chris Kaman loved to take a shot if it was there.
Yeah.
But he did not do so well defensively with Dirk, and he did not. I was very, very surprised with his rebounding.
Terrible.
It was so bad, and he was
cement shoes.
At worst, he was an average rebounder for his career, and
he
just
couldn't move.
Fell.
Last year, he just couldn't move.
Move on defense.
No, he's terrible. You're right. He didn't mesh well. Dallenberg's skill set will mesh better. Rebounding is going to be better. Shot blocking is going to be better. General presence defensively will be better. Not a world beater, but better. My concern is the minutes. Mm-hmm. Minutes, foul trouble, things like that. He needs to be on the floor. You really need that guy filling that role 25 instead of 16 for the way this Mavs team is put together, and I don't know if he can give him that. And then they've got, in addition to Brandon Wright, who we talked about, when they re-signed Wright, they talked about him as a center. Mm-hmm. In the past, he's been talked about as a power forward as well as a center. I think now maybe they've pretty much got him slotted at just center. You know, I mean, those things can be fluid. But based on what we're hearing now, that kind of seems like that's the case. And then they've got Blair to kind of be a really short Elton Brand center.
They're pretty much the same type of player.
So, yeah. So they've got minutes there, but Dallenberg is the true center with true size and can guard a big and can rebound. So I really think that the minutes out of him are going to be important.
You said 25 for him? 25 minutes?
It would be nice.
It would be ideal. See, I think that's actually kind of high.
You think?
I don't think you have to get that much out of him. I think if you can get 18 to 20.
I just think Dirk plays so much better when he has a traditional center.
But then you go off the fact that Wright, it was probably flawed or an anomaly, but Wright and Dirk actually played. They kind of played well.
They do. But that lineup doesn't defend against a lot of teams.
Well, like you already
said. But then again, we're not going to defend anyway.
Yeah.
We got Jose Calderon out there.
And Monte Ellis.
I guess that's part of it, though. Dallenberg will counter the Calderon effect to a certain degree, if it can be countered. he will counter it more than anyone else on the roster.
I think you just have to kind of be protective of Dallin Baird as well, just in terms of asking too much of him. So you have these options behind him in Wright, Blair, even Sarge to an extent for like a minute or two. You have these options to where maybe you don't have to rely on him too much.
Yeah, but at 32, with no more miles on you last year and no injuries, you should be capable of playing more minutes if you can stay on the court. So I think you go either way. So DeJuan Blair, interesting case here. This guy rolls in at the last minute after, thankfully, Greg Oden went somewhere else. I think he's just shot. He looks 40. His knees are 40. Sorry, not his feet.
I'm going to have to put an over-under on how many games he actually plays for Miami.
Oden, it's going to be low. We'll have to talk about that next episode. We'll get into some NBA talk. So Blair just kind of snuck in under the radar. He got into Pop's doghouse this past year, barely played in the playoffs. This is a guy who in limited minutes has done limited damage to limited teams, but boy, has he killed the Mavericks.
This is kind of the theme of the guys they picked up. Except for Calderon, I think everyone else has kind of done some damage against the Mavs.
Yeah, I can remember Dallin Baer in his Sixers days kind of having his way with Dampier even a couple times.
Well, who didn't have their way with Eric Dampier? Come on.
But yeah,
you probably could have had your way with Eric
Dampier. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe 10 years ago. Not today, that's for damn sure. So, yeah, I think that Blair is just kind of a wild card, man. Just kind of a bull in a china shop, energy.
He averages 8-6 for his career.
He's going to get you some rebounds. He's going to get you some dirty buckets. He's got no ACLs. He's got a chip on his shoulder.
Coach, my ACLs.
We will talk about the highlights from the did I have that? The highlights from the introductory press conference later.
You're prepared, dude. Don't question yourself.
We will have that later. And I don't think I cut his clip, actually, because it was too short to mess with. But he basically said...
a fan asked what team they're looking forward to playing.
He basically said, I'm looking forward to playing the Spurs. And other people, they asked the entire panel. And other guys rattled off a name here or there. Rick might have said something. And every time it would kind of get quiet and they'd wait for somebody else to say something, DeJuan would just lean up and go, Spurs. And then, you know, a couple more. Spurs. He was just very dry, almost like. And then somebody asked him what he. I have a note here for it, actually. Somebody asked him. Do I have that? Hang on. Let me see if I have it.
I have it. What you're looking for?
Here we go.
If it would pull up.
Damn. I got it right here.
First off, I hope you guys make us proud out there on the court. But my question's for DeJuan.
DeJuan.
You came up short last year in the finals. How's that motivation for you this year?
Of course, I want to get back. I don't think we would have came up short if I would have played, but hey.
Sick burn, bro.
So he calls out Pop, which is nice. And then that was before he said he wanted to play the Spurs.
Shot fired.
Multiple times. So I like a guy with a chip on his shoulder. There's a clip we'll play later where I think Rick says they needed an ass kicker. And
he fits that.
He's a Mav beater. And you know what? He might 12 minutes a game is probably what you're seeing out of him.
Yeah.
And,
I wouldn't expect more than
and
that.
And some nights none at all. And dude, that's fine. You're talking about a guy that's making like under $1 million a year.
Yeah.
He's
for sure.
24?
24. 1 year deal.
I'm in.
I think you talked about this where they couldn't really do what they wanted to do against the market with Calderon, but what I was gonna say, but I saved it for now, is that they might have outbid a little bit for Calderon.
But, boy, they beat the market on everything else.
They beat.
Including Monte Ellis. Yes. Before we get to Monte Ellis, though, Wayne Ellington, who is he? What is he?
He's a 3-and-D guy.
Does he play basketball?
He does. He can shoot the basketball.
3-and-D. We've talked about the 3-and-D guy, the Deshaun Stevenson mold.
He's Deshaun Stevenson, but not the crazy tattoos and the ATMs.
If he can shoot the ball at an efficient clip and live up to that D portion of the 3-and-D, then that'll be very valuable with the Calderon Nowitzki / Harris Ellis off guarding too small, undersized two guards.
I think the thing that I kind of take away, which I want to see, I think it's going to be touch and go on if he actually gets minutes or not. I think there's going to be a good stretch of games where he just doesn't see the court.
Yeah, I can see that.
But the thing I want to see is he's played with Minnesota, Memphis, and Cleveland, which are teams where he can be the 3-and-D guy, but he doesn't really have a guy to play off of.
There's nobody to play off of, and you might, in a couple of those cases, be the only damn guy on the court playing defense anyway. And moreover, you're not ever playing for a win, so you're not. It's just, it's a bad situation for a guy like that. Guys like that excel on winning teams. That's a tried and true truism of Confucius since 1427. So maybe he's a guy who comes in and kind of gets like a spot start here and there from Rick. You know, we got a guy we want you to lock down or
he's
whatever.
He's going to be a guy that he's looking for an answer and said, Ellington, I need you up there.
Is he like a long-armed 6'4", am I thinking? What's his height?
6'4".
Yeah.
6'4", 200 pounds.
So, you know, he's kind of in the he's kind of on the bottom range of the prototypical two-guard size.
They're getting taller a little bit. You're getting some more that you like in more in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, more in the 6'7", 6'8" range. Yeah. But really, 6'6 is like the prototypical two-guard.
That's the sweet spot.
You get some 6'4s. 30 years ago, you had a lot of 6'4s, but you also had a lot of Kelly Tripucas. Mm-hmm. So it's just a different world now. But they don't have a lot of guys in that range on the team other than, you know, well, Sean Marion at 6'7", you know, but obviously he's a completely different animal. Positionally,
he might be Ellington might be a nice maybe breather for Vince Carter a little bit.
Yeah,
they need to make sure he's okay. Yeah, this going into this season, so he might be a nice breath of fresh air.
All right, Monte Ellis,
big boy,
definitely someone, as you were saying, who the Mavericks beat the market on.
I looked this up. Okay,
of course, his old contract, he would have beat the market him as opposed to a team. The contract that he opted out of, which would have paid him $11 million next year.
He fired his agent.
He fired his agent after that, obviously got some bad advice, but he also got out of Milwaukee. So
which you wanted to
I'm
do.
Sure he sees that as a fringe benefit, and he won't miss the $3 million. Not like I would miss it. Miss it, but not like I'll miss it.
I looked at it. July 10th, Donnie Nelson said don't expect Monte Ellis to be a Maverick. July 12th, he became a Maverick.
Of course. You know, Donnie.
Things changed to make that happen.
How old is Donnie now? Like 53, 52?
Good question.
Early 50s?
I'm going to look it up.
You know, he was a young man when he came here. Little Whistle, we called him. You know, the older he gets, the more he looks like Nelly.
He does.
And I see him now, and I see old Nelly. I just need the Coors Light in his hand. And, you know, we all turn into our dad, whether we want to or not.
51.
51. Okay, I thought it was like, early 50s. Right what I was thinking. We all turn into our dad. He can't avoid it any more than I can or you can. And that's trouble for me. I don't know your dad.
He's cool.
My dad, that's trouble. So anyway, you know Nelly likes to throw smoke out there in his old days of wheeling and dealing and GMing in the NBA. So, you know Donnie's got some of that in him too. And that could have been him talking to the agent through the media. That could have been him just throwing smoke. Could have been anything. But it's definitely a situation with Monte Ellis, I think, where... I lost my thing. Come on, Facebook. Why is Facebook taking over my iPad? Anyway, it's one of those things with Monte Ellis where you have somebody who is more talented, you know, than anyone other than Dirk that you've had on your team in a while. You know, Jason Kidd... Obviously, Hall of Famer, downside of his career those last couple years, balling out. You know, Jason Terry's number is going to be in the rafters. I think that Ellis is, in terms of pure raw basketball ability, probably above Jason Terry.
As a basketball player?
As a pure raw talent. Now, as someone who has harnessed that talent and parlayed it into a winning piece on a winning team, Jason Terry has him head and shoulders and above and beyond, and he probably can't catch Jason Terry in that regard. You know, Jason Terry was vastly underrated second cog on a 10-year championship team, 10-year playoff team that went to a championship, and he was there for 8 of those, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
He redefined his career.
Absolutely. He really, I think history will be kind to him. But Ellis is more athletic. He's faster. He can get hot. He's just as much of a streaky shooter and can get hot just as much, but he's faster and more athletic. So
he's
in theory, he should be just as capable. But we've said this about other guys too. What made Jason Terry great and great with Dirk and great as a Dallas Maverick had as much to do with what was between his ears and in his mouth as it was everything else on the court. And he managed to put all that together in a nice, yummy pot of stew and make something great out of it. And nobody else has done that yet. But I think that's our hope for Ellis, is that he is able to do just a sliver of that, you know.
He's a Pimp My Ride version of O.J. Mayo. He's a souped-up version. You're kind of
And a far smarter version. Yeah. And Monte's not exactly known as Mr. Cerebral, but at least he's average to better than average when it comes to decision-making.
And I wanted to make sure I was right on this. Mayo's 25, Ellis is 27.
Yeah, Ellis is not that old. He just came in young. A lot of people forget how young he was back in 07 when he was just a baby and wasn't playing a lot.
He was just a baby.
And then that next year he blew up, you know, the 07-08 season, mm-hmm. the season after the horrible playoff series, which he didn't really play. He was just kind of a bit player in there.
When was the moped? Do you remember the moped incident?
No.
I'm looking this
don't
up.
Don't remember the moped.
He lied about...
lied about crashing his moped?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
When did that happen? I'm looking that up.
But he's somebody who...
2008.
You don't really want shooting a lot of threes.
No.
You want him playing mid-range.
He shoots a lot of the Jason Kidd threes.
You want him coming off the pick and roll. That's what you want. That's what they want him for.
And he likes to do it.
Coaches have talked about it. He likes to do it. And with Calderon actually knowing how to how to get a ball to somebody, should be good for he and Dirk.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can play. He can eat, once he learns to play in space around Dirk. Think about what J.J. Barea could do in space with Dirk. Monte Ellis does everything J.J. Barea did and is way, way, way better at it. And is talented enough that he can do it consistently night in and night out. He's been a 20-point scorer several years in the NBA, you know, whereas J.J. Barea would have a hot game here and there and get you 20. But it's an example. J.J. is the only guy in recent history that we've had that can turn the corner off a pick with Dirk and get to the hole.
Yeah. And he's taller.
And that's
he's a bigger version.
So that's my point for Mavs fans is imagine that. When you think about what you want Monte to do with the ball in his hands or whatever, imagine what that looked like with J.J., but imagine it with a former All-Star.
And more explosive.
And an explosive athletic player. So I think that there's some potential there for something good. I think it's a big win for the Mavs that they got him at the year's end salary that they got him for.
3 for $25 million.
Man, I mean, that's $8 million a year. Dude.
That's a bargain for what he can do.
What did Milwaukee end up giving OJ? Six and something? Six or seven?
Pulling it up.
Too damn much.
It was too much. It was 3 for $24 million.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
You just swapped out OJ Mayo for Monte Ellis 1 for 1. They basically got paid the same.
And everyone would take the Monte Ellis side of that. If you
they
get
would.
All things equal. You give me Monte Ellis.
I think there's a lot of teams that would that if they thought they could get Monte for that number, probably would have made more aggressive phone calls.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. I think Denver was in the mix for a little while, but they had some cap issues. And the thing of it is he has a player option, and I know we're gonna get going. He has a player option in the third year. At that point, you're like, he's probably gonna do the OJ Mayo thing and say, okay, I'm gonna bounce if the situation works out.
Well, and that's okay.
At that point, you're hoping he wants to opt out because he's done a hell of a lot of good for your team at 2 years to where he realizes or he feels he's underpaid.
And he, you know, and in best case scenario, you've been able to add another piece here or there and you've done a couple good things and Dirk's getting ready to hang it up or whatever and, you know, you can use the bird rights to money whip him a little bit and keep him around for a couple more years if he's been that good for you.
Right.
And if he hasn't, I don't know, 2 years, that's kind of a no man's land with Dirk. Like, it's too soon to assume Dirk's done, but it's kind of
You have too, an idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're,
tough,
you're looking
man.
At retirement homes
it's tough, brother.
At that point.
All right. So that's your roster, man. We got some guards. We got some bigs.
We got Bernard James, too.
We got Bernard James re-signed as well.
Yes.
After a little run through waivers.
That was a weird,
so,
weird
deal. It was a weird deal, but look, it's a guy, good character guy, true NBA center body. Spot minutes last year, everybody seemed to like the way he worked, and you needed a third big that was a big and not a DeJuan Blair. So, you know, put him in there with Dalembert and Wright, because Blair can swing positions. Wright can kind of swing positions, although he really probably won't much. So you're looking pretty decent there.
You have depth in all of the positions you need.
Yeah. You don't have superstars, but you got depth.
Yeah. Which was a win.
Yeah. All right, man. We're going to take a break. First hour's done. When we come back, what are we going to do? A little life in Vegas with Ballin. Ballin in Vegas.
That was a month ago.
That was a long time. Can you even remember anything? Most people don't remember Vegas the next day.
I remember it.
So, we'll see. But I'm curious to hear about your adventures, Summer League. I'm gonna you know, poop on Summer League like I do every year, but I still want to hear all the stories. But first, my personal hero, and he should be yours, Joe Walsh.
Hi, Joe.
Yo.
Hello.
Rocky Mountain Way from like 1974-ish, probably.
My parents weren't even thinking about me.
My brother Joe Walsh, mine weren't either. My mom was still in high school. How about that? My brother Joe Walsh with the James Gang playing some of that slide guitar, doing a little of that talk box, which I know it's kind of funny to make fun of the talk box. It is kind of stupid, but Joe pulls it off.
It's hard to go wrong with the slide guitar.
You cannot go wrong with slide guitar. I'm a major, major proponent of the slide guitar. Major proponent of Joe Walsh and his craziness and his antics. Mavericks Outside Report, episode 76, second hour.
Yeah.
We're now starting. So thank you for listening to us talk about this little sport of basketball.
They're playing basketball.
They're playing basketball.
Who sang that song?
Curtis Blow.
Man. You know everything.
Last month, brother, our man Ballin' with Brian Gutierrez went to Las Vegas to go to the Vegas Summer League to cover it for True Hoop, for two-man game?
ESPN Dallas.
Or for ESPN, that's right, for ESPN Dallas. I'm going through puberty. ESPNDallas.com.
Is that Bobby Brady?
Go there.
No, it was the other one.
One of them.
One of them.
Go there and have a good time and read stuff, and you might see an article from Brian. And if you do, well,
poop.
Then your life just got better.
So
tell me about Vegas, man. You're there to cover. You're there to cover games. You obviously are there to cover when Mark Cuban comes into the building and starts doing random things and quoting himself and then getting mad at himself for creating headline porn. So, what did you see, man? Summer League.
It is pickup
basketball with really tall guys.
It is a summer camp for basketball nerds, for bloggers. It's a way where everyone can convene and meet.
And I would have totally coattailed it out there with you had I not just gone to Vegas in April. I was telling Courtney that today. Actually, somehow it came up. And I was like, man, I've always wanted to go out there for those games, you know. And you were out there for a long time, though.
I was the whole time.
Like what, like 10 days? 8 days or something? 10 days. See, I don't need to be in Las Vegas for 10 days.
Right.
But I'm telling you, maybe like next year, maybe I'll go for like 2 or 3. That I could do. I don't need. Mm-mm.
And it's not like everyone.
I got responsibilities.
You got a kid.
I have debt. I have debt and a child. And by then, I might have a pregnant wife again.
Wow.
I don't need to be gambling for 10 days. I'm a little. I love gambling, man.
I hope she knows she might be pregnant again.
I love gambling.
Yeah, and it's not like everyone, all of the bloggers who go out there are out there for the full 10 days. They're like, no, I can't do that.
But you pulled it off.
I was like,
You had somewhere to stay, though, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, I did. And when I flew out, when I was heading to the airport, I was like, what am I doing? This is so random. I'm going out to Vegas for 10 days to go watch basketball.
To go watch marginally,
yes,
marginally professional quality basketball.
But I realized it was a good opportunity, so it was obviously too late to say no.
Oh, smart move on your part, and you know, an opportunity for sure because
you get to
produce some content for ESPN Dallas, which is a well-known outlet, and you get to go at least what little relevant things that are going to happen out there. You get to see them firsthand, which is cool because then you can apply that knowledge to your. Future analysis of the Mavs and this podcast.
Yeah. So I went out there. I have a friend that I've known since high school that moved. She moved out to Vegas like 3 or 4 years ago. And I was going to stay with her on the weekends because she lives 10 minutes off the strip. It's like, all right, that's a good way to save some money too. And then she told me, I got in Thursday night, and she told me Friday afternoon, yeah, I'm actually going to stay in town. I don't have to go, because her and her husband like to go to California, like once every 6 weeks. That must be fun to do when you live in Vegas, just to go out there every so often. And they changed their mind on going to California, so they were like, you can stay the whole time if you want. And I was like, okay.
Beautiful. Well,
that's money saved
right
there.
That's money in the bank, yeah, brother.
That's money saved right there. And they live 10 minutes off the strip, so that was convenient. It's over at the Thomas and Mack Center, UNLV campus, basically. There's the Thomas and Mack, which is the main court, and then the Cox Pavilion, which is like a souped-up high school court. The games are going on all day long, like from noon until 10. Wall-to-wall basketball.
How many games per day would you say that you watched on a given typical Ballin' with Brian day when you're not chasing down Cuban and Deshaun Stevenson in the stands?
On a day that the Mavs weren't playing, three.
Yeah?
Yeah. On the day that the Mavs were playing, I'd stay all day because they'd end up being the night game. For some reason, the Mavs were always the night game. So I just figured I'd stay and just watch and get prep work. They'd have shoot around in the morning. And I'm like, I don't want to have to commute back and forth, even though it's 10 minutes. But I just want to hang out there. And, of course, it's not as tight as a NBA season. Like I said, it's just me, Dwayne Price, and Earl K. Sneed covering the team at that time. So during a practice, usually that's closed off to the media. And the media comes in the last 10 minutes. Well, it's Vegas, and it's only a couple people. And like, you can come to practice if you want. It doesn't really matter. So it was fun to see.
And there's less for you to actually watch in terms of.
But it was actually hardcore practice for
I'm
them.
Sure, yeah. But relevance to actual games that matter is zero. So
it was interesting to see these players have to learn on the fly, learn what the plays are, and adapt. And you could tell some of these guys could adapt quickly, some of them could not.
Right, so even within Summer League, which is itself an amalgamation of many of the have-nots of the pro basketball hopeful, even within that population, there's a pretty obvious divide between the guys who have a shot and the guys who are just there to fill out a... Because you got to have warm bodies to play a game.
Right,
yeah,
for sure.
The few games I've seen on that level, which amount to all those games at Moody that the Mavs would sometimes line up with the Chinese national team or whatever. You see that. I think you see that. Or I guess those are the only ones. Wow. But I've watched them on TV some too. So that's where my memories are coming from.
Yeah. Obviously, to me, the biggest takeaway I got from it was seeing Gall Meckel. And
is it Gall?
It's Gall.
Gall?
Gall.
You don't have the gall.
Pretty much.
Here comes a Norm pun if that guy gets into the game at all. The Mavericks had the gall.
To get gall. he had so much poise in the games and in practice. He was really running the show in practice. He would make sure what Monty Mathis was wanting. He'd just check in every few minutes, make sure he knows what he wants, and then they would operate. And I don't know how much you actually got to watch of the Summer League, but in training camp and these preseason games, you want to keep an eye on what Gall is doing when he goes off the pick and roll. He's looking on the floor for his teammates.
You were all impressed. I'm very impressed with this guy.
I try to downplay my reactions to players because I want to keep an even keel, just keep to myself, keep to how I usually perceive things. I don't want to get too high. I don't want to get too low with anything. When it comes to basketball, life, whatever. But with him, it was interesting because there was all this mystique about him coming from Israel and stuff like that, and I hadn't really watched him play in Wichita State. So this was my first real time to watch him play. And then I remember what happened with the Mavs last year where they were just desperate for a point guard. So to see an actual point guard who's a legitimate point guard play was fascinating.
If last year did anything to our eyeballs, it made us really be able to spot when someone knows how to play the position.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is going to be obviously that what he's seeing from defenses, what he's being asked to do in Summer League is, you know, several notches below what's actually going to be going on when the real games start.
Right.
But if he shows that and they don't have anybody else at that level of prospect, if you will, or project guy showing that, then he's probably going to get a chance to try and show it in practice. He's not going to see the court a lot, but he's on the roster, and that's a start.
Right.
That's definitely a start. So what about Ricky Lido?
He was interesting.
Because this guy got a contract that, in my opinion, belies a second-round pick. What was it? Like about $1.5 million a year?
I have it right here.
It basically puts him in...
He's guaranteed $1.3 million for the first 2 years. That's guaranteed.
Each year?
No, total.
Oh, total?
Yeah.
How did I get... Man, I saw that reported like it was 1.3 per.
No. He's getting $544 this year and $816 next year.
Okay.
And then the last 2 years are non-guaranteed.
Okay. Well, that's a little more...
But for a second-round
pick... 44th pick or whatever he was, 46, I can't
43rd,
remember.
I think.
Yeah.
Well.
But guaranteed... As
Mama, I got knees.
I know. $1.3 million for a second-round pick is pretty...
It's still rare.
It's not as bad as I thought,
but it's still rare for him to get that.
It's changing now to where I think we're going to talk about it, but Zach Lowe chronicles this well. He's raw. He did not play organized basketball for a year due to...
Oh, that's right. He had eligibility issues.
Academic eligibility.
So this kind of just a roll of the dice, but obviously they must like something to give him an amount of guaranteed money.
Yeah, and
that is worth us talking about.
And Carlisle and Mathis both said he's coachable. He got better as the games went along. I like what he does off the dribble. He's got a smooth jumper. Dwayne Price again, he kind of took this a little too far. But he said that he has a shot like Kevin Durant, which is true. His shooting form does look like Kevin Durant. He has a nice elevation and that touch that releases smooth. But then he took it a step farther and said the Mavs might have found an answer. So then people try to correlate two and two together, saying that Dwayne Price is saying that they found Kevin Durant, which is clearly not the case.
No.
But... he's got that nice smooth release. He likes to go off the dribble, and he knows what he's doing. And he can pass the ball off the dribble. He's got a floater. He's raw, but he has a skill set.
Well, of course. You expect rawness.
He's got a skill set that can translate to the next level, but he's got to keep playing.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with him. I would love to know what, if any... covert input the Mavs new GM may have had on something like that. Probably nothing. I would assume that it's
at that
pretty,
point probably not much.
No, it's too early for that to have happened. But this contract is interesting. Zach Lowe wrote an article on where was it from?
Grantland.
On Grantland. Yeah, that's right. About how the flexibility afforded to teams with second round picks has created a market inefficiency now that teams can take advantage of, basically, because they can force a second-round pick to just waste away. They can just force a second-round pick to go to Europe or sit on the couch if they want. And so they can, if they feel like a second-round pick has more potential, is worth an investment, they can insist that a team option for a third year get put on or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even know how many years. I guess they could go up to four even if they really wanted to.
Yeah.
But obviously they probably stop short there. And so this article that Zach Lowe wrote actually talks about Ricky Lido and talks about how Lido's team and the Mavs were at odds, and the Mavs weren't leaving without that third year. And it's pretty interesting read. I would recommend checking it out. Ask the Google for it, and the Google will show you where to find it.
I think Chandler Parsons is kind of
the template.
He's the face.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Chandler Parsons is the template here, but Houston did it with like four guys, and Parsons is the only one that turned out.
Right.
But the point is it's a great way to hedge your bets here and take advantage of the fact that you've got a higher than average second round pick. We need to move on to our next topic, but I want to real quick make a point that what happened at the Summer League and everything else basically was indicative of, I guess, a move that happened right after Summer League, which was that the Mavs just told Nick Calathes to
peace out.
We'll see you later.
I think it was pretty much as the Mavs were heading out back to Dallas, this Calathes move came down.
Which this was a guy that a lot of people were high on and a lot of people were ambivalent on, and it just depended on who you talked to. My main thing on him was, as he went to college at Florida,
mm-hmm.
Actually grew up here, right?
I'm not sure about that.
For, or went to high school here, I think, or something.
That might be right. That might be right.
I think he went to, I feel like he went to high school here from Greece, but he's a bigger point guard. Isn't he like 6'7 or something?
Not sure about that.
I was thinking he was tall. But anyway, he's been playing in like some 2-bit fourth level Russian league with Roy Tarpley and Dennis Rodman. And
he's 6'6.
Okay, that's okay. A big point guard.
Okay.
So, you know, it's just one
and
of those things where.
He was in Florida the whole time.
Okay. So, if it's just one of those things where if you've got a foreign player like that and they're playing overseas, or any player playing overseas, whether they're foreign or not, I mean that they're playing overseas, you have to pay attention to what league they're in. What league they're in means everything. You know, it's just like the college football blowhards that, you know, get all bent out of shape about mid-major conferences or when TCU went undefeated and they were in the Mountain West 4 years ago or whatever that was. Your quality of competition says a lot. And he was in a Russian league that isn't even the top Russian league. So I'm out. See ya. This is not news.
One of the things that I found interesting was David Thorpe, who is a well-regarded coach and scout and trainer now, does a lot of work for True Hoop. I got to talk to him in Vegas talking about Mekel. And he had trained Calathes too. And not getting too deep into it, he valued or he projected Mekel to be a higher prospect than Calathes. And that's going to be something we might not be able to track based off of if Calathes even actually plays in Memphis. But according to him,
we can track it on who's out of the league first.
That's true. that's a very good way to gauge. But apparently it's Mekel over Calathes.
I mean, you know, the fact that Mekel sacked up and came over here and played summer league while Calathes stayed in Russia eating borscht for 7 years, that tells me everything I need to know. Moving on.
Okay.
You had a note that we were going to talk about Dirk and where he stands now. Dirk, the man, the legend, the myth, Dirk Nowitzki, the Mavs entry on the ubiquitous sports talk radio dollar menu topic of Sports Mount Rushmore. He is obviously on that. We're not going to talk about that, though, because it's a dollar menu topic. But regardless, Dirk's awesome.
A lot of people
What's
think,
his outlook?
A lot of people think he's done.
He's not, dude. He's not done. He's Robo-Dirk. He's just going to be Robo-Dirk forever, even when he's old. Beer gut Dirk hitting corner threes like Sam Perkins at age 54. But seriously, he stayed here. How long did he go back to Germany? Not very long this
like
year,
like maybe
right?
a week right. at the most.
Had a baby. So
his wife had a baby.
Well, yeah,
that's a story.
True. That would have been a hell of a story. So
that's like,
you know,
Danny DeVito.
I don't know if that affected it, but he's been in town more this summer, and he and Jay Crowder have been working out since like a month ago. So you know, Dirk being Dirk, I just think that the last two seasons, Dirk has not been ready to play.
Has it been since 2010 where he's actually been able to be free and clean? And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because 2011 he was party Dirk. He like just like drank beer all summer or whatever, which is fine. He's allowed to do that. But he obviously was starting to have he was still not 100% from the knee problem that he missed 9 games for in early 2011, and just through simple Mr. Miyagi rubbing his hands together and putting it on his knee, you didn't bother him until later. And then obviously that season wore everybody down. 2012, we know what happened. He had to get surgery, tried to come back without having surgery, knew he was hurt, eventually had to throw in the towel. Yes, it would have been smarter to just throw in the towel right after the 2012 season ended and come into last year ready to go, but he didn't do that. He's Dirk. He wanted to play through it. It was worse than he thought. Whatever. Last year was lost, you know, because he was gone for
30 games.
40%.
I think he
of
missed
it.
The first 27 games.
Yeah.
But he missed like 30 total.
That's like 40% of the season.
Right.
So, you know, he's going to come in healthy this year, man. He may not be, you know, he may not score 25 a game.
He doesn't need
but
to.
But I don't need him to do that. I need him to be Dirk in the fourth quarter. I need him to be Dirk and attract attention on the floor, things like that. And I don't see any reason at this point, assuming he's healthy, to believe that he can't do that yet. You don't go from being the best basketball Jedi in the world to just being trash. This is not a pitcher.
Unless you're on PEDs.
This is not a pitcher in baseball. This is not a running back in the NFL. This is a guy that has a long career. You don't see those kind of drop-offs in basketball without catastrophic injuries. He didn't have catastrophic injury. He had nagging injuries and, excuse me, a conflagration of what I think are unfortunate circumstances with the injuries and the timing of them. Injury, really, you know, kind of all through. Lockout season and lockout schedule. Crappy teammates. So, I don't know. I would imagine also that he's probably pissed that people are writing him off.
I think he is. And I think Cuban even mentioned that during the summer, is that he's been letting Dirk know that – and he knows, too, because he reads. And
well, sure.
He watches
it. Wait a minute. Dirk can read?
He can.
He can read English?
He can read.
He doesn't just read German?
No. But he likes to read what people are saying about
the team.
But
there's people out there who think that.
Yeah, probably.
Same damn people who thought Mark Cuban flew to L.A., played a two-minute YouTube video, shook hands, and said
bye.
Peace. Idiots.
Yeah, there's a lot of those. But I think he's a guy that likes to hear people dogging on him and saying that he's done, because he uses that as fuel. And I think he's only really gone to touching a basketball and shooting, like, with probably within the last 2 or 3 weeks. But ever since the off season really started, he probably took 3 or 4 weeks off. So that was, like, in June. So after that, he's been working on cardio and getting his knees stronger and ready at that point. So he's been working out the entire time. So 35-year-old basketball players don't necessarily want to work out all the time. But he is one of those guys that will. And he's motivated. He's hungry. He's out to prove that he's not done. Cuban's been using the example that Karl Malone won an MVP at age 35. I highly doubt that Dirk will be an MVP-type player at 35. But if he can get a vote, that's a good thing for
Dallas. Karl Malone was also a physical freak of nature. That guy didn't have
like -2% body fat.
He had no body. He had so little body fat, he like pooped fat. Like he had so little body fat, he just expelled it from his body. But look, man, a mad Dirk is a good Dirk. I've been saying that for 12 years or longer, really, but especially for 12 since he kind of came into his own. A mad Dirk is a good Dirk, and I'm down for it. Man, before we run real quick, Mavs have a new GM. What did you think when you saw Mavs have a new GM?
I was like, what happened to Donnie?
Any inclination that it was coming?
No.
See, I didn't either. None whatsoever.
There was nothing. The first thing I thought of is Donnie gone. What happened to Donnie? Did he die? What happened? So,
was there just a parting of the ways?
Yeah, like, I was concerned. I was like, what happened?
We're just, you know, I'm out.
Cuban's,
you know,
like, I got to get out of this.
Or Donnie.
Yeah.
Like, to me.
Well, I don't know if Donnie would ever do
that. It's hard to imagine, because he seems very happy with where he is in life in general. He just comes off that way when you hear him talk.
He's just very cool and calm.
Or see him walking around. You know, he just always kind of has his head up, and he just, you know, whatever. Very easygoing type of situation with him, it seems like, personality-wise. But, you know, you never know. You just don't know. You don't know what's happening in the back rooms. Yeah. You know?
And it was kind of weird, too, because this was going on in Dallas, obviously, and then I'm still out in Vegas at the time, so I'm not really sure what's going on. And then at this point, again, I'm having to relay and tag team with Stein and McMahon, trying to figure out what is going on.
Oh, and I'm the name dropper. I'm over here collaborating with Stein.
You've already dropped like four names already. But I was trying to figure out what was going on, and they were trying to figure out too. And it's kind of fun to see this side of the story on what happens, because everyone's trying to. The wheels are spinning like 100
everybody's,
miles an
everybody's hour. Speculating, and you just don't know. And
before, emails are being sent and everything.
Before
like
we
that.
Get into who Gerson Rosas is, what this means for the front office in terms of what Donnie's role is, whatever, this is a example of how the Mavs do business, which is they keep their shit to themselves. Yeah. They really do. Like the example I use is that talking about Delonte last year. Nobody knew what really went down with Delonte. Dodge and I were talking about how nobody was
name dropper.
That's just a guy. He's some dude that sells software. Anyway,
it starts Nugget Wars.
Yeah. We were talking about how nobody was offering Delonte a 10-day or anything. So we were like, some real crap must have gone down, and we don't know what it is. Why don't we know what it is? Because the Mavs don't air their dirty laundry. Mm-hmm. They just don't. And this is not the same thing. It's not dirty laundry. But it's that same mentality. It's that same idea of we have a goal. We have a way of doing business. This is how we operate. We're going to keep it classy. We're not going to have a bunch of leaks. I think Cuban came out relative to this, some story. I don't even know if it was this story. But he basically said, if you hear a leak, it's because I decided
made it, a point
it
to
needed
be.
To be leaked. Yeah. We wanted this information out. Basically, I'm the director of PR. You know, I'm the communications director, and I decide when a piece of information needs to go out. It's my point.
Is that your dad?
No, Trophy Club's doing something where they're redoing some water thing tomorrow. So water's going to be a little short for like a day. Uh-oh. They're like replacing some big pipe, I guess, or something. I don't know. And I've gotten 4 robocalls from the water thing in the last 2 days saying, you know, hey, don't decide to fill your pool tomorrow. Well, I don't have a pool, so. Anyway, so Gerson Rosas comes from the Houston Rockets to be the general manager of Dallas Mavericks. Donnie Nelson remains president of basketball operations. Basically, the way the organization is couching this is that this is another smart guy in the room. We've talked about the three-headed monster because Rick is involved in there as well when it comes to throwing his opinion in on personnel decisions. Obviously not final decision. But I would say he seems like he gets a little more audience than some coaches do. I think a lot of coaches are involved, but it seems like he's always on the same page with Mark and Donnie, and he will refer when he's talking about things. He'll refer a lot to conversations with Mark and Donnie about player acquisition or whatever. So I feel like he's in the mix. So they've taken the three-voice room. They've thrown a fourth guy in the mix there, and I think Mark's quote was something along the lines of, this is a guy who's good at looking at data, good at the analytical side of things, whereas Donnie's more of a people, person type of situation, mm-hmm. more of a relationship. Donnie's more like the expert at building relationships, which I guess is good for working with other teams or whatever. Just another smart voice in the room, and you know, I think it's been decision by committee with the buck stops at Mark for ever since Donnie became president of basketball operations in 2003. So I don't really see that the decision-making tree changes at all.
No.
There's just another voice in the room, which I think probably can't hurt, you know?
One of the things that I wrote about, and I'll be brief about it, and I wanted to still do research on, is what are the ancillary or lower-tier moves that Houston has done while Rosas was a part of the organization? Because you expect Daryl Morey to be obviously hands-on and involved in all the big moves. But at this point, when it comes to those lower, maybe second-round trade picks, deals, stuff like that, you don't have a lot of time and you don't want to be in that kind of minutia. So you delegate that to your Gerson Rosas. So I want to see what kind of deals Houston made that are those lower tier deals to see if those actually panned out, because those have his fingerprints all over them.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So if those are hits,
good point.
That's got to be a very good sign for the Mavericks. But another thing Cuban talked about is these networks that evolve when you make deals. He'll talk to an agent, or Donnie will talk to a GM.
Different guys have a different rapport with other different guys depending on who they talk to the most. So certain teams, Donnie might get the call. Certain teams, Mark might get the call. Yeah.
So adding another person who has a good rapport, clearly, in Rosas is a good positive. And the way I see it, if you add another smart person, there's very little that can really go wrong as long as they're all level-headed.
To a degree, as long as you don't get so many voices in the room that it's a law of diminishing returns. But,
no, yeah.
But I don't think there's any, you know, Donnie's been president of basketball operations and GM now for 10 years, so I don't think there's anything wrong with having a GM. It's not like they're blowing up the org chart in a way that no other team does it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, it just kind of, I mean, it was surprising. I think we all were like, whoa! And given the polarity of the offseason results relative to what the desired result was going into it. I think everybody, their initial reaction was to think that this had to mean something. Is there a shakeup or whatever? But as it turned out, it was just another very Maverick move to me, mm-hmm. Maverick style move, which is, you know, we're going to go very quietly, find a way to, you know, change our game up a little bit. The only thing that I think I'm calling a little BS on here is Cuban's got this little obsession now all of a sudden with like
bioanalytic,
whatever. Like, oh, the enzymes in your liver tell me that you could develop a great floater. Like, I don't know, dude. I'm not real, I don't know. That just kind of sounds like a little bit of a trendy thing that's going to just...
That was...
Like, kind of the flavor of the week kind of a deal.
He was on ESPN Radio the day...
Like, the cryotherapy I can get into.
No, cryogenesis, that makes a lot of sense.
I want to go do that shit.
No, that...
I want to go do it when it's 106 outside. I'm going to go mow my yard and then get in my cryo machine. But, yeah, you know, I'm not saying it's not something that you shouldn't look into. You hire a company to compile data for you. You look at the reports. You put it out there. Maybe it starts to work. Maybe it doesn't. My whole career is analytics, and my whole life has been about analytics and decision intelligence and mining big data. So I understand the value in that, and I understand that there is something to be said about getting numbers in front of people and then trying to convince them that they should make a decision based on those numbers. So I understand. I'm just taken aback because I feel like Mark's throwing a really hard sell all of a sudden. It's like, it's his new toy.
No,
it's his new toy.
I think that was just kind of a misdirection or something like that, just to kind of, like, I don't know, mess up with people's heads or
give,
something to make them feel smarter than
sports writers something to write about.
Yeah, because it just didn't make a whole lot of sense. And when I was transcribing like that bioanalytics part, I was like, whoa, wait a second, what is he saying? Because there's a bunch of stuff here that doesn't really make sense to me, but it's trying to make him come off as really super smart or ahead of the curve or something like that. But that's kind of just a wait and see kind of thing to see if that actually is something.
All, you know, it's take the data and figure out what you do with it. I just don't know why you need to sell it so hard.
Right.
Well, we're supposed to be going to break. Why don't I play some music, Brian? What do you say?
I say you should go ahead and play some music. What are we doing next? What is the next thing on the docket? We're going to talk about more Cuban.
More Cuban,
this
man.
Has been the Cuban show,
Cuban
basically.
Cuban into Cuban. Well, at least we're segueing well.
He was on the television, American television.
In the USA.
Yes. I believe it was in Los Angeles.
Yes.
He said some more sporty type things, but it was actually not about basketball, which was interesting.
He did have a few things to say, right? Yeah. I think we've got that. It wasn't anything new or whatever.
No.
You know, nothing we haven't already covered. We've covered it.
There's that, and I think Ryland has compiled some audio of the press.
Yeah. The introductory press conference, you know, every year when the... Or not every year, but in the years the Mavs have had significant roster turnover.
The last two or three years.
So we've got that. Definitely the last couple. So we've got that. And right now we've got a cover, a Chambers Brothers cover by Steve Earle.
Steve Urkel?
Yes.
Oh.
That guy can play. Oh, and Sheryl Crow's on this. I forgot about that.
Oh. Interesting combo.
She's okay. Just take her voice and leave everything else.
That's what Lance Armstrong said.
What's up? That's awesome.
You're going to talk in the air.
Where'd my microphone go? You know, I could just do this. Ambient microphone. You know, when David Bowie recorded Heroes with, can't think of who the producer was, Brian Eno maybe. But anyway, when he recorded Heroes, you know, the song Heroes, mm-hmm. We Can Be Heroes Just for One Day, yada, yada. He started out singing normal volume, if not a little quiet, right up against the microphone. And with each verse, he'd get a little further away from the mic. They had him keep moving, and he would scream, you know, sing, and then ultimately yell louder. So by the end of the song, he's like 40 feet away from the microphone in this giant room and just screaming into it. But the end result is that the level on his vocal is basically the same as it was in the beginning, but it sounds completely different in terms of how he sounds. Listen to it, man. It'll trip you out.
Interesting.
Mavericks Outsider Report.
He must have been high.
There's no doubt he was high. It was the 70s? Is that a 70s track or early? Yeah, I think that was a 70s. Anyway, Mavericks Outside Report, episode 74.
That was a prerequisite to get in the recording room.
Talking music trivia. Yeah, definitely. Talking music trivia, talking Mavs, talking Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban was on The Tonight Show.
Mark
Cuban. About 10 days ago.
Yeah.
Give or take, and was talking to Jay Leno about stuff. I guess just promoting Shark Tank. Was that the main reason for being there?
I don't even think it was Shark Tank.
Was it just I'm Mark Cuban and I go on TV?
Yeah, I'm going to be on TV because I'm a billionaire.
Well, okay.
That must be nice.
Yeah, it must be.
Well, you are talking to Jay Leno, so I don't know
what that's all about.
How nice that is.
Yeah. So anyway, hey. What's up? So anyway, what did you have on that?
I just randomly decided to. Because
I didn't watch it. Like, I knew it was on, but I didn't make a point to go watch.
He talked about how he got bumped from. He was supposed to. This was on a Thursday. He was supposed to be on Tuesday, but Barack Obama was on, so he got bumped.
Oh, big deal.
And then he talked about how he had dinner with Barack and dinner with President Bill Clinton, like, later in the week.
Two games against roast beef tech and whatever.
That, too. He talked about the Dwight Howard stuff.
Right. I did catch somebody tweeted about that.
And then Jay wanted to talk about some more sports, so he asked him about A-Rod. And then he basically, Cuban went off on a massive rant saying, well, he didn't get mad, but he was very passionate about his stance, saying that it's Bud Selig's mafia and you have to do it his way or
it is
the highway. See, I'm not very well versed on baseball, so this is where you're going to have to help me. But he stood up for A-Rod and said, okay, he obviously did some bad things. And apparently it's just getting real right now because Ryan Dempster just threw at A-Rod's head.
Good.
And there's a benches clearing ball going
good.
On.
Man, I wish we were watching that.
Between the, I guess it's the Yankees and the Red Sox?
Yeah. Yeah, Dempster with the Red Sox.
Again, I don't really know what's going on.
After sucking dog with the Rangers last year. Almost called him the Mavs because I'm used to talking about last year sucking in Mavs all in one sentence.
Sounds awkward.
Yeah, so.
But so he stood up for A-Rod even though he knows he's in the wrong and said that Bud Selig's trying to make a point because A-Rod's such a big deal. And then Cuban went on his little rant
about how he's not going to try to buy a team right. as long as Selig's in the mix because right, he's right. had
two bad instances.
Yeah, bad instances there and talked about the Rangers auction. Where he said we had the money, we had the bids, and they kept changing the rules, which, you know what, he didn't need to buy the Rangers. The best thing that possibly could have happened for the Rangers happened. They got a couple guys that have deep pockets, that know what they have in John Daniels, that know what they have in Nolan Ryan, and there was obviously a little bit of some drama with that earlier this season. We don't know if that's going to carry over or not, but they have prioritized, they're trying to keep John Daniels. So thank God that those guys won that, even though I have utmost respect for Mark Cuban as a basketball owner. And I think he'd be great if he was the owner of the Pirates or whoever else. He's going after the Pirates and the Cubs. So that's fine. A-Rod, okay, let me give you my disclaimer. I hate that son of a bitch, okay? I'm a Rangers fan. I don't like Yankees.
So did you like him when he was on the Rangers?
I was uneasy with it from the get-go because of that contract was – it wasn't just a big contract, okay? You know, it wasn't just a big contract. The Rangers have paid guys in the past. It was like you had to know with where the Rangers were, you had to know something was up that he picked Texas. Mm-hmm. It's just like he shouldn't have picked us. And, you know, they were terrible with him. After he was here 4, 5, 6 months, we were all excited at first. After he'd been here a while, you're like, wow, this guy's an asshole.
The honeymoon was over.
Honeymoon was over. Fast. Nobody likes this guy. He's a jerk. Whatever. He won an MVP here. He hit 50 home runs at least once, maybe twice. I can't remember. I hate the guy. He plays for the Yankees. I hate him for, I hate Yankees, period, so whatever. Although I've always kind of liked Robinson Cano. Don't tell anybody.
Jay-Z likes Robinson Cano.
No, but, all other things being equal, Alex Rodriguez is one of the worst human beings. But that doesn't matter. What this is about equal application of the rules. Mm-hmm. And there is no equal application of the rules. It's Bud Selig's Banana Republic. He's going after A-Rod. Mm-hmm. He's basically just dreaming up a punishment. Like, we piss and moan about Stern or Remember when Stu Jackson still the VP of whatever?
I think he still is, yeah.
Remember there for a while when there were suspensions and fines and it was a little bit arbitrary with those guys and we would talk about it, you know, not necessarily on this program, show, podcast. What is this?
It is
but,
a thing.
But, you know, back in the day on the message boards or whatever, that was always a big topic, was that these guys are arbitrary. Seelig's worse, man. He's just terrible. So if you violate the policy, you're supposed to get 50 games.
Mm-hmm.
And there's ways you can violate the policy without testing positive, obviously, because all these guys that just got suspended, including Nelly Cruz, none of them had a positive test. And the guys that had tested positive in the past for the same incident didn't get resuspended again. Bartolo Colon, Melky Cabrera, and then some other cat.
What did Bartolo Colon take?
Twinkies, fried chicken, gravy. He basically had gravy on gravy.
Were people taking diet PEDs and he just took the real ones?
He's been eating gravy sandwiches.
Okay.
So
that was awkward.
Yeah. So anyway, you're supposed to get your 50, and then, you know, after that it escalates or whatever. Well, A-Rod, despite having admitted, what was that, 3-4 years ago, he admitted to steroid use and then was like, oh, I did it in Texas. Basically, all that Mitchell report stuff came out.
Yeah.
He must have had somebody nipping at his butt, and he probably thought that he had, you know, some reason to believe that he was going to take a fall. He wanted to preempt it. He came out and said, I did it. I'm not doing it anymore. He blamed it on being in Texas because Texas was the epicenter of Jose Canseco in 93 and Juan Gonzalez and Rafi and all those guys that admitted to it. But obviously it was more than just, I mean, it was rampant. It was everywhere, everybody. And there's still a lot of guys using it, I can assure you. But anyway, he never actually violated the policy. He's never done anything that has violated the policy. They've never had the trial, if you will. It's not a trial, but whatever. He's never done it. So he should be getting 50 games. They're just dreaming this up. There's two theories for this. Theory one is, if he has to serve this suspension, it knocks his money off the books for the Yankees next year.
Right.
Which helps them tremendously because they are over the barrel right now, waiting to get it up the butt bad as far as luxury tax, the fact that he's decrepit and can't play anymore, and basically it's $29 million next year to be a guy that they don't even want on the team. So there's a conspiracy theory that Seelig's helping out the Yankees. The other conspiracy theory is that A-Rod had a part in outing Ryan Braun's involvement in this. Braun, Brewers, Seelig, Brewers. So there's that whole thing. So there's that, and so people think maybe that's why, and then also maybe just because A-Rod's an asshole, which might have a lot to do with it, and I realize I don't like the guy at all.
Wasn't he a Minotaur for a minute?
He has a painting of himself as a whatever, Centaur, Minotaur. What's a Minotaur? Is it the same thing?
Maybe.
I don't even know, bro. Neither of us are nerdy enough to know the difference between a Centaur and a Minotaur.
I'm not sure.
And I apologize to any listeners who do know the difference. But you're a nerd, dude.
Rylan, that
sorry.
Means this.
Hey, man, I can't believe you don't know that. Jeez. So anyway, I agree with Cuban. He's right on. And, you know, what he points out is the same thing. It's just another example of what he's talking about relative to having trouble buying a franchise to begin with, is that it's kind of just a Bud Seelig doing his thing. He hasn't been necessarily the greatest commissioner ever. Kind of just because he's inconsistent and isn't really, when you're in a position like that for any pro sport, you know, you have to have your own rule of law. You know, it's not like you're, you know, like people say, you know, you're in Congress, you should follow the Constitution. Well, you know, MLB doesn't have a constitution or whatever. I mean, maybe they do, something like that. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I'm no Lone Star Ball, but you know, I think that there, you have to have your own, like, center of gravity rule of law that basically ensures that you're consistent. And if there's a collective bargaining agreement that includes something, whatever, and you have discretionary powers that enable you to do this, you can't abuse that. And it's obviously an abuse of discretionary power if he's doing this. And if A-Rod's going to get a random 200X game suspension, which doesn't make any sense.
It don't fly.
It doesn't fly. I don't agree. I hate A-Rod so much, but I don't agree.
Strange bedfellows, basically.
Yeah.
Is what has been created via Mark Cuban. I wonder, well, obviously now you have something to watch later tonight with what's going on with this scenario.
With this brawl with he and Dempster?
Yeah.
I wonder why Dempster. Supposedly, the latest thing that just came out a couple days ago was that A-Rod had a hand in leaking the names of all these other guys. These other guys in the Biogenesis.
He's that powerful.
Thing. I don't know. Like, I don't know why. I don't understand what he has to gain. If he knew he would take a fall, and
he wants to take everyone else down with him.
Take everyone with him because they were going. Because why? MLB was going after him. It was a witch hunt for him.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't do that, it's only him taking the fall, which is wrong. Again, Nelly Cruz, you know, deer antlered it up. He needs to pay the price. I love you, Nelly. I hope you have a garage full of deer antler spray and you take it all in October and win us to a world championship.
Just win us to the title.
Just win us right to the title and then, you know, collapse in a heap of syringes and go down in legendary history. That's fine. But, you know, you got to apply the law equally. You do the crime, you do the time, whatever. That's what America's supposed to be about. Hallelujah, holy shit, where's the Tylenol? I mean, it's just, you know, let's be real about this. And I am, you know, as a very, very serious baseball fan, I'm ready for C-League to you know.
Peace it out.
Go on down the road, right off into the sunset. In the meantime, while I was ranting about that, the Mavericks held a press conference.
Mm-hmm.
What day was that, Thursday?
Yeah.
So Mavericks held a press conference on Thursday. They do this from time to time. We have talked about it. We talked about it last year. We've told stories about
the first one you didn't go to?
About the old ones. You know.
You like, out of recent years?
Falwell, I listened to the clip that you sent me of it, and Falwell said on that clip, he said that there had been three others. But
I can think of two.
Right, I can think of two others. I think he might be thinking of the other thing that I told you about earlier in this show, which wasn't a player press conference.
That was like an eyes wide shut kind of thing.
It was
he
and Rick and Mark and Q&A. So there were no players. So maybe that's what he was thinking of. So no,
maybe.
Based on your memory and my memory, this is the first one I had to miss, which sucked. And normally I would have gone, but we had some coworkers in town from the UK. And
bloody good time, chap.
Which I took them to a Rangers game. I'll have to tell that story.
Oh.
It's fun to go somewhere with people that don't know anything about a sport that you know a lot about, because you get to like explain things like you explain them to your wife. You realize there's so much about any sport, so many things that you take for granted knowing. So we'll have to get into that at some point, talking about teaching someone a sport, you know, an adult who...
That's like you going over there and them teaching you cricket.
Yeah, exactly, or whatever. Hell, teach me soccer. But anyway, I didn't feel like it'd be right to leave them for half a day when we were trying to make the most of this time, all of the people all together meeting and talking about stuff. Didn't get to go. I was bummed, man. You didn't get to go either.
Work.
Yeah.
Ish.
Responsibilities, dude.
Bro.
So it sucked.
Tell me about it.
Did go last year. Went in 2004 for the very first one they had. Unfortunately, didn't get to go. But fortunately for us, we were able to get the audio because we have friends in low places. And I have the highlights. I went through and listened. Before we play these clips, though, dude, I want to just go ahead and call out the media.
Uh-oh.
The media. And I don't know who was there. So
I have a good idea who was there.
I don't know who I'm calling out. Like, last year, man, a lot of people were there. Like, last year, there was, like...
Bennett Skin, all the big boys.
All the beat writers were there.
TV people were there.
Ticket had a couple people there getting audio but not asking questions. TV people were there. Mark Stein was there, probably just because he was in town, though.
Yeah, Stein was out of town.
Yeah, so... But, I mean, it was like... There was, like, 60 media people last year.
It's O.J. Mayo, dude.
There's no
O.J. Mayo.
There's no way.
O.J.M.
There's no way there were 60
Chris
this year.
Chris Kamen?
Because they laid out.
Chris Kamen.
They laid out. Open it up to questions to the media. Mark makes a statement.
Mm-hmm.
Open it up to questions from the media. Basically, Earl K. Sneed stood up first, asked two questions.
Only got half of them answered.
And then at the end, Earl asked two questions. Right before him, Eddie Sefko asked a question, because before that, somebody had joked about how, I bet Sefko wants to ask a question.
I think it was Rick.
That's right. It was Rick. Basically calling him out because nobody was asking questions. And in between that, some random dude named Royce Fisher asked a question.
That's one of.
Do you know who that guy is?
I do know who that is. I do. That's a whole nother segment during the season of like the ins and outs of what's going on in press conferences with some of these people. That's we have to table
mark,
that.
Mark that down. Table, yeah, mark that down for future reference of the ins and outs.
That's weird.
I've never heard of this guy.
Yeah,
so anyway,
he's there. Yeah.
So I'm calling out, and then, of course, they threw it out to the guys roaming, and Mark kind of moderated with these guys walking around with microphones. So, which they do every year that they do this. It's cool. They let the fans ask questions, and we usually will, when we've been doing a podcast, we made sure to pull that audio because there's always funny stuff that happens. So there were no good media questions. I was hoping there would be. There was nothing of – I mean, it was okay, but there was it was just generic stuff. So media, come on, man. I'm going to make a big hashtag, come on, man, to our media friends in Dallas. Think of at least one question.
Well, Tim wasn't there.
And that's the thing. If Tim had, Tim not being there changed the dynamic of the entire line of questioning, because if Tim's there to break the ice –
It gets surly when he's in the room.
Yeah, but if he's there to break the ice, then the whole – everything else changes. I mean, honestly, I was thinking that exact same thing. So y'all suck, whatever. But we have –
I would have had like six – questions.
We have some clips, and first clip we have, let me move my little note over here so
you
I can
got such a fancy computer.
Read what I'm doing.
It's got that Google.
I got that Google machine.
You got that Google
you
trick.
Got that Google. First thing is this, which is me trying to figure out who this guy is, and this is your friend Royce, who we'll hear more about we'll hear more about later.
Royce Fisher, IRS Sports Radio. My question is for Devin Harris.
So he sounds like a character to begin with,
uh-huh.
But I'm like
that's how he usually sounds.
That's the only guy other than the beat writer for the
where was Dwayne
for the nope there was no Dwayne.
Where was he?
Was it the slowest press conference
of all time?
Yeah. So
no,
you had
of all time.
So I picked that up because I wanted to find out who he was. As it turns out, we can't get into that today. We're going to get into that at a later.
It must have been the Cowboys, man. The Cowboys have forced all those people out to Oxnard or wherever.
That's exactly what it is.
Probably well timed by the Mavericks.
Yeah,
at that point.
That's fine. Smart move on their part.
Tim McMahon out of town.
Royce helped us out here because Royce started what came to be a trend, which is that people are having trouble saying Dewan Blair.
I always knew I would come back at some point, so I'm just excited to be back and ready to contribute. So thanks.
Thanks, Devin. You still look really young.
Yeah.
Javon Bear, how did it feel to be
what
in a
that?
Mad uniform? And for Javon Bear,
Javon?
Javon Bear.
And for Javon Bear, and for Javon Bear.
Javon Bear. So I'm thinking we probably call him Javon Bear the rest of the year. Then, of course,
that's a drop.
That was, you know, we thought we were going to get funny from the audience. We mm-hmm. got funny from the press.
Yeah.
Now we throw it to the audience. And here's the first thing. Old buddy Mark.
Oh, yeah.
Old buddy Mark regulating here.
If you guys, and as much as you could, if you could talk into the microphone, because it's a little hard to hear up here. So as best you could.
I love
Is this
that.
Good?
Cool.
Listen, he says, listen.
Best you could.
Is this good? Cool.
You know, the blowing up the mic with,
is that good? That's your dog making sure it's cool.
Anyway, that's funny enough as it is. But the fact that he follows it up with cool, I mean, that just tops it all off. The next guy follows in Royce's footsteps mm-hmm. here.
I got another question for Cuban. I'm glad with all your picks, Jose, Monte, and Dewan Blair.
Is it Dewan Player?
Dewan Player. Here.
I got another question for Cuban. I'm glad with all your picks, Jose, Monte, and Dewan Blair, Brandon Wright, and everyone else.
Okay. This is the most mean I'll ever be, but he probably knows what the difference is between a centaur and a minotaur.
Yeah, he did.
So. That's the most
yeah,
mean.
Yeah, so
I'll
we've
ever
got.
I have no place to stay. That
Javon
night.
Bear, Dewan Player,
mm-hmm. Gary
then,
Player.
I played you the Blair calling out Pop, which is fun. And then this thing, I pulled this because the guy calls Rick Uncle Ricky.
Yeah, I remember that.
And as it turns out, Rick gave a really good answer to this question. It's about a minute and a half answer. So I'll just let it play.
That's a joke that did not resonate.
No.
Uncle Ricky.
It fell flat. That's, I give the guy props. I think it's a great joke.
And he was calm and cool. Nice delivery.
He made a good, you know, and not everybody is a disaster on the mic, you know. And it's, you know, I don't want to poke fun because you do hear yourself and get echo, which is hard sometimes for people to deal with. And I've never stood up and asked a question. So
next year, Ryland,
I might be like, how did it happen? But I don't know, because the echo might be that bad. You know, I don't know. I don't want to ask a question now because I know too many people. Like, I don't want to say something silly or, you know, whatever.
And then Mark's like, I don't know you.
Well, what's funny is like last year, I was talking to Mark before.
You went down to the crew. Yeah, went down to the pool.
Right. And so I went back and sat down, and the ladies behind me had seen me talking to Mark. And so they were like, can you get to him to come and let us ask a question? And I said, okay, I'll try. You know, and then, you know, the logistics of it make it obviously difficult to ensure that you do. But I did say, hey, Mark, you know, try to get over here. But it didn't happen. And it was probably for the best.
Probably.
He probably did the world a favor by not getting back over to that side of the room. But anyway, the Uncle Ricky joke fell flat. I give the guy major props.
Super flat.
I'd like to get him on the show sometime, but we don't know who he is. but I want you guys to listen to Rick's statement here, because he kind of gives a good overall just summary of where his head's at with this team, and in the process lets you in on some of the thought behind where he was most pained by last year's team, if you will.
Just kicked in the nuts.
So
about it.
Here's unknown smartass one.
that's his and, film credit.
And Uncle Ricky.
All right, this is for Uncle Ricky.
Crickets.
In my eyes, this is sort of a similar situation to the 2011 team. Now, that, in my opinion, that wasn't a team. That was not 11 players. That was like one.
Get to the question.
Get to the question. It's not the best way to frame the question. You knew what he was trying to say, but
he must know Jeff Kaplan.
Jeff Kaplan
was there. What? Okay, Jeff Kaplan's there, why is he not asking a question?
Got Royce Clayton or whoever
Royce
asking
Young.
A question.
Group of magic that was
Royce
incredible.
Fisher.
Now, in a similar situation, do you believe that this team has the potential to gel like that and have that magic of 2011 team that sort of happen in the middle of the year?
Well, the thing I like about this group is that we have more experience than the group that we had last year. Our nemesis last year were close losses. At one point, I think we lost 7 or 8 overtime games in a row, which, you know, it just hasn't been the history here. And a lot of that had to do with inexperience. And so we're much more experienced at the guard positions with Jose and Monte this year. You know, Sam has been around this league a long time, and he, as Mark mentioned, you know, he's going to give us rim protection and rebounding, and he's going to shore up our defense. You know, Brandon fits in. He's been great the last couple of years, and these other guys all fit into the picture. You know, DeJuan was a really important acquisition for us because Elton Brand did not return, and we need that physical ass kicker, to put out there and be an enforcer for us. So that was really key.
I don't know about you guys, but
Wayne is important because knockdown shooting has become such a major part of this league. You've got to have guys that have to be guarded on the perimeter, and if they're not guarded, they're going to make. So he was really big, and Devin Harris is a very good all around player and a two position player. He's got an issue with his toe. He had to have surgery, but, you know, in 2 or 3 months, he'll be getting back into the fold, and by December or January, he's going to be, you know, a multi-position player who can bring a lot of speed to our team. So all these guys have experience, and that really helps. And I think the thing that's similar, the biggest similarity about 2011, that team was a very experienced team. We still have youth on this roster. We've got 3 young guys that are rookies. But I like the mixture that we have here. And the other thing I like is, you know, I think everybody sitting at this table feels like they have something to prove, and they want to be part of an organization that gets back to winning in the playoffs. And right now, that's our mission.
That's a very good answer. And I don't know if Cuban did this on purpose or if it just happened to fall that way, but every single guy they picked up has not won a ring.
Yeah.
They are still hungry for that.
There's some chips on shoulders.
They're pissed off from their previous team for whatever reason, and they're going to a nurturing place that will let them be pissed off.
But except for the minimum guys, they're not one-year guys.
True.
And that goes a long way. As we learned last year, I think that you want to believe that a one-year guy is the same as a three-year guy or a four-year guy, but it's not. I mean, they're human too. They're thinking about their future. I think there's something to be said about the security and knowing that you're going to be there. Basketball is all about chemistry and all about gelling on the court, and I think that it all plays a role in the way a player views himself when he's playing in terms of what his job is, you know? So I guess it's all a good thing. And, you know, Rick pointed out, he said it without saying it, the glaring deficiencies of last year's team were youth on the wrong parts of the court. Youth is a good thing as long as it's in the right place. What we saw last year was youth where you don't want it. Or, well, youth and a lack of skill combined where you don't want it, you know, or lack of, not maybe skill's the wrong word, but you know what I'm saying, lack of seasoning.
Yeah, and then they lost like 7 or 8 overtime games in a row. And that's just, that's kind of an anomaly in and itself. But
it was an NBA, wasn't it an NBA record or
tied
an NBA record?
They tied the record, yeah. And then that just goes to that experience. If you don't know how to close out those games, they're going to sneak up and bite you in the butt. Before we go, can you play that Falwell getting sound level again, because that's pretty hilarious. I'm sorry if I'm putting you on the spot.
If you guys, and as much as you could, if you could talk into the microphone, because it's a little hard to hear up here, so as best you could.
Is this good? Cool. Cool.
Oh, man.
I'm going to save that first part. I mean, don't you think that Mark, in his sort of almost school marm tone, would be a good addition to, like, the intro to our show?
Yes.
If you guys, and as much as you could.
Like this. It's like.
If you guys, and as much as you could, if you could talk into the microphone, because it's a little hard to hear up here, so as best you could.
Is this good? Cool.
this is the.
Yeah. That would be good.
You know, mix up the timing a little bit, yeah. Where it hits that, is this good, cool, right when it hits the post.
Yeah.
And then I come in and say, give the intro or whatever.
That would be good.
Love
that's
it.
That's a project for you.
And then I'll definitely, yeah, that's great. Yeah, I may do that later. That's awesome.
You got something to do.
Awesome idea. Like I don't have enough to do as it is.
You want to break or just want to roll through it?
Let's go ahead and break real quick. Okay. It'll be a quick break.
We got to talk about the landscape of the DFW now with people who want to enjoy their sports talk.
Which I'm one of those people.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
There's some shifting that's going on that could really F things up for a lot of people.
It has to ultimately result in some changes. So
we'll talk about that after the break.
Word.
When Tom Petty gets done singing. Maybe he's high right now, too.
OTP.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, I like this song. I think this is an underrated song in the Tom Petty catalog. This is You Wreck Me from Wildflower or Wildflowers, 1994 release from Tom Petty, a solo release. I don't think it was a Heartbreakers record. Could be wrong on that. I don't know. Let's see. What's it say? It just says Tom Petty, no heartbreakers. Okay, good enough. Maddox Outsider Report.
F them heartbreakers.
A little bonus time here because we had to cram in so many segments earlier because it's been so long since we had a podcast.
It's been over a month.
So we've decided we want to get back into the habit of talking about random stuff in addition to basketball. Just because
segments.
I think we're good at talking about random stuff. I mean, who's not good at talking about random stuff?
Royce Fisher.
Royce Clayton.
Royce White?
Royce White probably is not.
He might have some issues.
So one of the things we wanted to cover was some of the changing winds in the DFW Sports Radio landscape. If you are from this area, you likely are familiar with the perception, I would say. Not the reality, but the perception that sports radio stations are like West Side Story. And they all meet and snap their fingers and pull knives on each other and dance around and have like these major rivalries. Granted, there are some on air, you know, bear poking that go on, and a little bit of, you know, some will poke fun at others and make fun of others, and some of it's all in jest, and some of it probably is a little not so good natured, you know. But I think people have this, perception that it's very vitriolic, and there's maybe a very small handful of people that
not
actually
on the top level
work to perpetuate that. But no, I think it's more that the listeners think that, and the reason listeners think that is because we are home here to one of the greatest sports radio stations, and that's 1310 Sports Radio, the ticket 1310, whatever, however they refer to themselves. But you all know
the
them.
Dog,
you
the
all know
dog.
Them as the Ticket. They dominate the ratings, and rightfully so. They have incredible talent. They have an incredible good fortune of having a daytime lineup that hasn't changed since like 1998 or 1999, whenever Bob and Dan moved into middays. And it's a great radio station. I love the Ticket. I love the Ticket. I love what they're about. I love their brand of sports talk. I mean, and they have because they are so different from the cookie cutter sports genre, they have a very us against them mentality. They have oftentimes an us against them mentality for their corporate parents, which is healthy. Most people, I think, feel that in their day-to-day lives. People identify with that. So anyway, that us against them mentality inspires fierce, fierce loyalty among their most dedicated listeners, to the degree that I think their listeners, a lot of times, I mean, I'm one, but I think some of the listeners, a lot of times, ascribe a negative feeling towards the other radio stations that the actual hosts don't necessarily have.
I agree.
Any more than they have to the management of their own radio station. Now, that being said, there are some individuals that maybe rub you the wrong way. Maybe they rub me the wrong way. Maybe they rub Brian the wrong way. We would never know because Brian is the nicest guy in the world.
I will not talk ish about
anybody.
And
he's not talking. And, you know, I try not to, too. It's just not a nice thing to do. But there are some, and maybe those people perpetuate some of that. And maybe other people, even if you love them, maybe they do it, too. You never know. Everybody's human. But anyway, the reason that I bring it up and frame it in that context is that Ticket owns everybody in ratings. There's another school of thought that maybe the ratings aren't the only way to measure the success of a radio program, and I think there's something to that.
Not a whole lot, though. I think it still begins and ends.
I don't know, man. The measurement is very shady, the measurement of it. As an analytics guru, I shouldn't call myself that. There are actual analytics gurus in the world. But as someone who's familiar with the world of metrics, what's up, stream? You want to see my foot?
That's a drop.
As somebody who's familiar with how you measure things like that, the sampling technique is very ad hoc. So anyway, the reason I bring all that up is the Ticket is owned by Cumulus Radio, Cumulus Communications, Cumulus something. I don't know. Cumulus Broadcasting probably is what they
call
themselves.
Was that recent? The Cumulus? Like within the last 3 or 4 years?
Within the last maybe like 5 or 6.
Okay.
Citadel? No. Yeah, I think that Cumulus bought Susquehanna, and they were a smaller company, and so they went from smaller to bigger and all the crap that goes along with that. There's a lot of corporate crap that goes along with that that you don't like. Taking a long time to hit the post on this one. Cumulus bought, they didn't buy, they reached a local marketing agreement, LMA, with ESPN to operate ESPN 103.3 FM, ESPN Radio, which at this point, mainly for all practical purposes, is the home of Randy Galloway.
Yeah.
Other than that, they're basically...
And the Rangers.
And the Rangers and the Mavericks, which is another topic we got to cover. But Randy Galloway is, you know, a guy that's been on the radio for 25 years in Dallas, and he's got a big following, and he helped get Ben and Skin on the air over there back in 09, whenever, I guess, or 10, 09, I think, or 10, no, it was 10. But other than that, they have a very national focus on there. They have midday show with Richard Durrett and Ian Fitzsimmons, and our friend Landry Locker is on their segment here and there, you know. But they really... They carry Mike and Mike. They carry Colin Cowherd. And they do their thing, you know, and they have ESPN, and they are ESPN, and they talk sports. And
just sports.
You cannot play a noise of someone farting, and you cannot, you know, you can't talk about what happened to you over the weekend. And if you do, somebody's going to be in your ear saying, why were you talking about that? And everything else. So it's the complete opposite of what Cumulus does, and also really what the Fan does over under CBS radio. The Fan is more sports-centric than the Ticket, but they definitely go off on tangents. And I think that may have, if anything, is probably more of a byproduct of the personalities of the hosts and maybe the familiarity of the listeners. The shows there aren't as old as the shows on the Ticket, so you don't know the people as well. So, you know, you're more interested in what someone did over the weekend if you've been listening to them for 6 years as opposed to two. Mm-hmm. You know, so maybe there's some of that involved. I don't know. But anyway, so you can imagine when this comes down, a lot of people are like, oh, what does this mean for my precious radio? Because there's people that listen all day long. I listen. Mark and I in my office, we listen all day long. So a lot of people are speculating. The Ticket signal sucks. It's terrible.
It does.
1310 sucks. They're on 104.1, which also sucks. They're about to let go of 104.1. So a lot of people are speculating that when after they let go of 104.1, they're going to move the Ticket to 103.3 and move the ESPN stuff to AM.
Or whatever.
They can't have 104.1. There's like right. an FCC thing that says
you can't have. Or they can just go to another station. Just whatever.
They could do any station that's under their, any frequency that's under their company in this area, which would be could be 570, could be 1310. Could be 660, I guess. Doesn't? No, not 660. What's the station that the Mavs games go to when the Rangers are on, or vice versa if they have a
I'm not
conflict? 100%. I thought it was 660, but that's a different company. So who knows? But anyway, there is a lot riding on that. Now, when there was an article that came out when Ben and Skin left ESPN, and ESPN bumped up the national programming, basically. The result was they had more national programming in some during the main day. A lot of people said, well, are the flagship local teams that are using them for their broadcasts for their games, are they going to want to keep ESPN 103.3 as their flagship if they're not having the maximum local programming when the other two stations, the Ticket and the Fan, are local all day? And I thought, that's an interesting. I think Barry Horn mentioned that in one of the articles he wrote about that. And I thought, that's an interesting way to look at it. I hadn't thought about it like that. I assumed they wanted to go with the name ESPN. The signal's strong. The name's big. It's recognizable. ESPN has a lot of resources, whatever. So I thought maybe there was something to that. But just last week, the Mavs re-upped with ESPN as their flagship.
For 5 more years.
For 5 more years, which seems like a long time.
It is a long time.
So they're not going anywhere. Don't know if the Rangers are going anywhere.
How long do you remember how long the Rangers were?
No idea, but they moved in 2011. They went to ESPN in 2011, or maybe 12, but I think 11. So that is a thing that makes you think that ESPN radio frequency, even if it changes, the brand is going to remain. They're still going to run those local show. I'm sorry, those national shows. But then to make it even more interesting, Randy Galloway, their anchor locally, says he's going to retire at the end of the year, and he says that he was going to do it anyway.
That is true. I have heard that.
You think that's for
sure? No, I've heard that several months ago. Yes.
It seems to me like, you think he saw the writing on the wall, though?
That's very possible, but I think it's...
Because he doesn't...
He could leave whenever he really wanted to.
Right, but it's easy money. He just doesn't want to work for a new boss.
That's true, too.
That's my first thought. So with him gone, then a lot of people are speculating that ESPN would then just move the flagships to a different... Or I'm sorry, Cumulus would move all that flagship broadcasting and national stuff. Are they even going to bother to replace him with somebody local?
They could just use their own Ticket people if they wanted to.
Well, I mean for ESPN.
Oh, for ESPN?
Yeah.
No, I doubt it.
And they're not...
He's the one that carries that show.
So if Cumulus is operating ESPN, then do they allow... I meant replace his show with a different show.
Oh. But
they're not. Do they allow Cumulus, if they do allow them to program the station? Well, now ESPN under the banner of ESPN, it's like, you know, it's just this crazy. You've got two brands that completely clash.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, man.
It's gonna be weird. I mean, I would think that this market is the only one that, out of the major markets, that could find, I don't know how to really describe the Ticket in this scenario. I guess a renegade station. could find a renegade station that would topple an ESPN in a major market. You can't see that happening in New York. You can't see that happening in L.A., Florida, wherever. Dallas is probably the only major market where you see a renegade station, quote-unquote renegade station, yeah. topple.
The outsider.
Yeah, topple ESPN.
And they've done it from day one. They were there before ESPN, yeah. which probably went a long way towards that. But they had established, to that point, their identity before ESPN came along as not just wall-to-wall sports, but sports and other things mixed in. And, you know, so they beat them from day one, and they continue to. So people, obviously, there's an indication that people want that, but not enough people want to do that. I think the fan is kind of attempting to replicate that formula. And obviously they attempted like hell because they tried to bring Bob and Dan over, which was another big thing that almost happened that would have really, you'd think, we're talking about this, which is an interesting little, what does it mean, you know? And it's something that really is only interesting to a very small segment of people, but... And had those guys moved stations, that would have been like an earthquake.
And it's kind of interesting, too, because I think Ben and Skin have actually mentioned this because they're open and honest about the way things have shaken out for them, is that they were offered like a six-month deal from ESPN when it was time to renegotiate with them. And then it went to a year or month by month.
When I heard that at first, I was like, well, that's kind of a shitty move. But now I'm
It makes a lot of
now
sense.
Now I'm like, was it because they're planning on just having no local programming in six more months?
I think that's pretty much what it's coming down to.
You know, which I think that's a complete mistake. Like, I don't really listen to Galloway, especially not now that basically my favorite shows, I'm be interested in your list. My favorite shows.
I don't have a very big list.
In this market, Bob and Dan, number one, and then just a teeny tiny notch below them, I put Ben and Skin in the Hardline, equal, and then Musers just below that. And then I listen to Norm because he's the only thing on worth listening to at that time, and his show's just not as good. I love Norm. I think he's awesome, but he's better when he's with the other guys and they're all kind of doing their thing, whether it's just Norm by himself with Mike Soroy kind of prodding him a little bit. It's okay sometimes, but it's just, you know, he gets off on horse racing or he gets off on just saying the same things over and over about the Cowboys, which everybody's guilty of. You know, he needs another, you know, he needs a counterpoint or something. But anyway, so I don't really listen to Galloway because two of my favorite shows are on against each other at that same time. And I probably do Ben and Skin like 70% of the time. But he's got a big following, you know, Galloway does.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's just that he's been around for so long and he's created that niche.
But
that
my thing is, well, he wrote for the Star Telegram and, or wrote for Morning News and moved to Star Telegram, and they paid him buku bucks, and that doesn't exist anymore. You don't get paid that much to write columns anymore, even for a big paper. Only the like older guys that have that established name do that. But I think all sports are local. I have no use. I must not be the majority because there's somebody listening to Mike and Mike. They're huge.
Yeah.
I could give a shit. Every time I turn on Mike and Mike, all they're freaking talking about is the Patriots, which you personally probably like, but come on. Seriously, all I'm hearing is about some. And
it's just an excuse.
And I can dial into the. I could. And I don't. I always go to the Musers now, but years ago I used to flip around a lot. And, you know, it could be the absolute death of the football season. Like, what's the absolute low point in the year for NFL football? I don't know. Like May?
Yeah.
They're talking NFL. Like, give me something else. But if they do give me something else, it's Coastal, you know? And it just, sports is local. Maybe there's enough, I guess there's enough front runners in the world.
I think there's enough
people who want to hear other things. But
I think that's what the case is, and they gravitate towards those larger markets, and that's what's popular. It's the Yankees or the Patriots or the Dodgers or the Lakers or whatever. Because they're getting those bandwagon fans, and then they can capture that group of haters or opposers that are going to speak their mind.
The other thing is, though, a lot of people will go to whatever ESPN has because they're ESPN. Mm-hmm. ESPN is like the New York Times of sports, whereas you'll see if New York Times runs a story, all the other like TV stations and outlets will pick it up and run with it. ESPN's the same way. People look for content based on what they've seen from ESPN. So if ESPN wanted to go and find a bunch of guys that had that were a little more national in their appeal, but had the same sort of game as the ticket guys, people would like it. Mm-hmm. People would eat it up. But they don't do that. They do their own thing. They have their own thing, and then they don't want you to play a fart drop. So they're all, you know, whatever, something up their ass. So that is what they are. But I just think that the end result probably is that they'll be the destination for national shows, actual broadcasts of games, and then that's pretty much it. I don't think they're going to have – I mean, I don't see them having local programming at this point. If Randy Galloway's gone, are your local – you're not going to roll with just a couple of –
But then,
you're not going to roll with a Rangers beat with a Rangers blogger and a guy who talks about SEC football all day as your main local anchor. It just doesn't make sense.
But then the question is what do you make of the fine print of the deal with ESPN Radio and the Mavs, because they're going to continue their Rick Carlisle show. They're going to add a player to the show as well.
That's for sure.
Yes.
So, I thought you were just saying, like, hypothetically, obviously, no, those things are in the contract.
Carlisle and a player are in the deal.
They do it on pre and post. Think about it. Whenever you're listening to the pregame presentation, they would call it the Rick Carlisle show. They would call it, most of my pregame listening on the flagship was in the Avery era. Now I usually am catching whatever's on the ticket on the way to the game. But they would call it the Avery Johnson show. Joining us today on the Avery Johnson show is Coach Avery Johnson. Oh, and look, with us today we have Marquise Daniels smoking a blunt. You know, and so that's contractually, maybe that's how it happens. You do have that in the post game.
Maybe you have that on a Saturday. You just throw it in on a Saturday, yeah, for your weekend show.
Well, and we've been told without a doubt that for the most part, stations really don't care what they even put on the air.
Right. Right.
They just, it's who's willing to go out there and
who will do the work.
Who's there to do it for little to no money, and then just, you know, they're doing it because they're trying to get a leg up on, you know, building their resume or getting better or whatever. And that's it, you know, right, getting the experience pretty much. So, hadn't thought about that. Now, how does this affect who is talking Mavs?
I mean,
to me, since the flagship's not moving, it doesn't change.
Yeah, I think the people you want to hear talking to Mavs are still going to be a relevant voice in doing that. I don't think anyone gets severely hurt or anyone's voice on the Mavs gets crippled.
I had thought initially it might signal a change for the flagship. And if that's the case, then, you know, you might have had a different emphasis on a different – like we were talking about it at work. We thought maybe CBS would just buy them up because CBS has money to spend on that. It'd be a win for them to take it away from ESPN, mm-hmm, and they already have the Cowboys, whereas I think the ticket doesn't really want it.
No.
At least their hosts don't want it.
No.
And they don't have the signal to support it. Of course, now they take 103.3, they do, so that could change the game a little bit. They still have hockey, but nobody listens to hockey anyway, so I don't know, man. Interesting stuff if you're into that.
I think it is interesting, but I don't think it has that big of an impact on the Mavs, but I think over the next year or two, it's going to have a radical impact on how people listen to their sports talk, which is probably one of the largest markets in the world or in the country.
Well, how many have three stations that are doing it all the time? And also, I would say, I think the number one thing is going to be that the ticket's going to find its way to 103.3.
Yeah.
Signal.
One way or another, it's eventually going to happen where that's the case.
I can't imagine. If they don't do that, then
what was the point of doing
then it? Then everything bad that's ever been said about Cumulus was just the tip of the iceberg. Because, dude, like, I mean, it's such a gem for them. I mean, it hurts them already to not have that signal. They're tripling up on everybody else's ratings with a terrible signal. Imagine what they could do with a better one, you know?
And I don't think the fans are really going to care, because the way they'll see it is a competitor just got out of the race.
Yep.
That's
yep.
all they really care about. They and still have the Cowboys. That's all that really matters.
And the way I look at it is the people that are listening to ESPN at this point, to a national show, they're probably not paying a lot of mind to what's on the other two because they're local all day. Mm-hmm. Like, they might flip over for a little bit, but really, if you're in that mindset, if you're a Mike and Mike and a Cowherd listener, and you can listen to that every day, there's no way you're listening to the ticket. There's no way. You just can't do it.
The only national I like is Scott Van Pelt, and Ryan Russillo. Those are the only two I like because they have a
different vibe.
They have a younger vibe. They do the pop culture stuff. Which is kind of rare, but they have a nice younger voice.
Yeah.
So I like that.
So where are your shows, man? What's your favorite?
I put Ben and Skin top. I put Bob and Dan, and then I put Scott Van Pelt and Ryan Russillo on there. I do like listening to Galloway.
I still enjoy him. Too much competition in that time slot.
And I think after that, that's about all I can
say. I enjoy him because of his bit. They have never, since he started that show over there in 2000, mm-hmm. never had anybody worth a damn on the microphone with him.
Right.
I mean, their producer for 8 years of that time frame or however long it was, should have been the guy talking because he would have been more entertaining.
Right. I think that's about the extent of my list. It's just that I don't have a whole lot of time to really listen to that I can dedicate myself to the radio. But I enjoyed those that I listened
to. I'm at the computer all day, so I'm streaming. And unless I'm in a meeting or whatever, I'm pretty much listening all day. I don't hear everything because if I'm reading something, I can't hear something.
Right.
I have this disease.
Now that I actually think about it, I would actually put, and it's a random show, it's the Saturday ESPN Dallas game day show that they do. I'd probably put that third on the list because it's a nice variety. It's got Ted Emmerich, McMahon, Jean-Jacques Taylor, and Landry.
See?
So it's a nice melting pot of people, and they're all...
If Tim McMahon and Landry Locker had a show together, I would listen.
Right.
It's like people don't understand. I mean, I don't know. Is there that much... I feel like everybody I know has the same opinion. Is that because I only talk to people that agree with me? Where are all these people that want to hear this generic, boring crap? They have to be out there. Or is everybody just wrong? Look at the meteoric success of The Ticket. That should be proof that the market for that overwhelms the market for blasé stuff. Mm-hmm. But yet, here we are. So, I don't know. It's a mystery, man. It's a great mystery to me.
Now, in terms of radio content, yeah, ESPN is faltering here, but in terms of web content, ESPN has the market.
Well, oh, absolutely. And I think their local ESPN Dallas outlet, when they started doing those local outlets for that, I thought that was genius.
That was like within the last 6 to 7 years.
I'm thinking like 2005, 2006, about that time frame, maybe 2007.
That was smart.
I love that. Like, that's the only thing it's the only ESPN brand anything I consume anymore. We're talking about this before the show because that's content that is interesting to me. It's relevant locally, and it's the same. It's you get to understand the points of view of the people that are doing that are actually writing the stuff and covering the teams. So it's more interesting. I'm interested in what Tim McMahon writes, even if it's just a little blog entry that's primarily informational. There might be a Timmy Mac nugget in there of him taking a shot at something. I'm interested. I'm going to run through and read it real quick, you know? And that's how you get people hooked, is you get people identifying with having an interest in the individual, you know, and not just the facts.
The content, yeah.
Yeah. And so, I agree. I think they have that on lock. And when I first heard Cumulus was the quote I saw in words was, Cumulus is buying ESPN Dallas. As it turns out, they're operating... They're going to operate the station. But when I saw that, I thought, like, the whole damn thing, like, that doesn't make any sense. So, you know, I don't understand. All sports is local. All sports is local.
Error.
Hey, man.
Error. Yeah.
Important announcement. That segment went a really long time, but, hey, it's one of those topics that just kind of meanders.
It's fun. What's your title?
Oh, man.
Uh-oh.
I have an announcement to make.
You have gonorrhea.
No.
Oh, okay.
That would be unpleasant. Glad that's not the case. What's all these... alerts on my phone. Anyway,
the water.
Have an announcement to make, folks. I am proclaiming myself the Twitter critic. I'm the Twitter critic.
Explain.
I'm the guy. I'm going to critique how other people tweet. I'm going to critique how other people use Twitter. Landry Locker calls himself the podium critic, mm-hmm. guy we were just talking about, ESPN 103.3, calls himself the podium critic. He likes to take football coaches, big deal, post-game, game day, head football coaches, hold court at the podium. Some are good, some are bad. He likes to call himself the podium critic. In that line, I'm going to call myself the Twitter critic. And here's why. There's a lot of damn people, and I'm following them on Twitter, or maybe I'm not anymore, that don't know how to use Twitter, that just don't get it. And it's easy. Don't you think Twitter is easy to understand?
Yeah.
Like, don't you think that the purpose and the advantages and the characteristics of what makes a useful, successful Twitter experience are obvious?
Yeah.
I'm whistling S's here. I need to
turn this down. Networking and figuring out what you want, and you collect what you want, and you communicate with those people about what you want.
Yeah, and if you have an audience, you know this firsthand. How many followers are you up to now? So humble he doesn't even know, folks.
6,220.
Okay, you have a big enough audience. You understand how to cultivate that audience. You understand how to give them what they're looking for and how to utilize that. There are too damn many people that have 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 followers that just don't freaking get it. So I'd like to tell a story, but I want to wait. I'd really like to get Tim in here because he really would understand. He could add so much to this.
You just have to have him call in.
For the story. Well, I was going to holler at him a couple days ago and see if he wanted to come over, but then I got busy and forgot. But what I want to do, though, is I want to just go over the points of Twitter. If you do these things on Twitter.
He's very quiet and silent on Twitter.
Yeah, he does not tweet well. He doesn't use it right. He'll have a golden thought, and it gets texted to me and Mark, and I'm like, tweet that, and he won't do it. Ooh, that's number 6. Okay, or number 7.
Wow, you have 6 more ahead of that?
They're not ranked. Oh. But this is just going to be,
give me 2 or 3.
No, they're quick. They're just little bullet points.
Okay.
These are like the commandments of Twitter. These are the things that as this season of basketball and MOR goes on and we hit these other things, I'm going to take examples that I see where people are doing it right or doing it wrong on Twitter. And if you follow these steps, then you're going to be a successful tweeter. And it should be easy. It's the easiest damn thing in the world, okay? First off, Twitter is supposed to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter, above all, everything else, Twitter is supposed to be fun. It's for joking. It's for being a smartass. You cannot take it seriously. You're getting your information. You know you've got basically two kinds of follows. You're following someone for info, or you're following someone for commentary. If you're a person that generates commentary, you gotta be fun. You have to be fun about it. If you're not fun, you're pointless. Okay, mm-hmm. You can be critical. Like, okay, I'll throw down my gripes with this or that, or say this isn't working or that isn't working. But I throw enough humor in there, I balance it out. Okay, so in that same vein, you can't take yourself too seriously. You cannot get wrapped up. There are people that they get so wrapped up in their own Twitter following and their own blog following that they think too much about every tweet. They just think too damn much about what they're tweeting. And so they're so worried about that they're just taking it too damn seriously. Or if somebody pops off to them or says something rude or disagrees with them, they get all personal about it. You know, like, you don't have to do that. Don't take yourself seriously. Just don't do it. I had a guy who, there's a dude, it's the story that I'd like to tell with Tim here, so I won't go into it, but basically, I had to unfollow him. I've refollowed and unfollowed him like yearly for the like last 3 years, because he's an ass. But this year, I stuck with him because he was really producing some good thoughts. And then I asked him an honest question, and he was just an ass about it. And he's like this to all kinds of people. And so finally, I said, dude, I'm out. I'm unfollowing you because you keep being an ass. And he retweeted me saying that. That's taking yourself too seriously. He retweeted that and then tweeted something on the lines of, oh, this is why some people just don't tweet. Okay, asshole. Guess what? You think you're such a big deal with your 20,000 followers, you forgot that I tweeted about unfollowing you because there's probably 200 people that follow me that will laugh their ass off when they see that I just called you out. It's not all about you. Twitter is a two-way street. It's two-way communication. So don't take yourself too seriously. If you take your own self and your own stature too seriously, you forget that other people might be tweeting for a purpose as well. Be unique. Don't repeat what everybody else says. Don't blow up my timeline. Don't clutter it. That's two things, really. It's just one.
That's like when everyone says the game is starting at 7:40.
Yeah, yeah. Don't repeat information. In the internet age, information is a commodity. You either need to be a primary source for information, like your quote board stuff. Everybody knows I'm going balling with Brian for my quote stuff. It's purely informational. You don't offer any commentary with it. You do other things where you do commentary or whatever, but you don't offer any commentary with it, and it's unique, so people know. You're not out there saying, Mavs are up 7 at halftime. Mm-hmm. There might be one or two people that do that. That's their job. Don't repeat yourself. Don't clutter. This goes back to the people that are too damn serious. Do not suffer fools on Twitter. If you have 6,342 followers, you don't spend time worrying about the idiots that reply back to what you say and say, why didn't we just sign Dwight Howard to a max contract? You don't reply to people that say, Dirk sucks, he's white. You just don't reply. You know why? It's pointless. You have 6,000 followers. 6,300 followers. 6,000 of them are smart and are following you for your witty observations and informational topics. They're not following you to hear you converse with idiots. So don't. Leave them out of it. Enjoy your smart followers, not your stupid ones. Your smart ones are waiting for you to give them good content. Jamie Newberg replying to every dumbass that loves David Murphy so much that they can't see the fact that he's batting 215, that adds nothing to me. Nothing. Get over it. Stop talking to stupid people. You got 25,000 followers. 400 of them are idiots. The rest of us would like for you to bring something to the table instead of talking to the 400 idiots in the room.
Lost his list.
And then the other thing was tweet without fear. This is what I tell Tim. You have a thought. You got to tweet it if it's good. You can't save it and only send it to your buddies. You got to tweet it, man. You got to just tweet without fear. Tweet what you think. Don't curate your own tweets unless it's just a pointless, dumb tweet, which we all do. If you just tweet what you're thinking, the followers will come to you. The Tao of Twitter.
Wow.
I'm out.
Drop the mic. Boom.
Hashtag, hey, oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, you mixed them both up. You had them both going at the same time.
That was a knuckle drop, but it worked.
I guess it did. So, Rylan Rowe, the Twitter critic, has been born on August 18th, 2013 at 8:40. He was born, hatched out of the interweb. We should have had some good bed music under that one. That would have been a good one.
Oh, damn, yeah.
My bad.
So, like, what's your, in a nutshell, I mean, you're a good example. What's your Twitter philosophy in a nutshell? You, to me, are a guy that knows how to manage having a large following. You don't suffer fools. That's the thing, right?
I do sometimes.
I do. If you can be funny about it.
Yeah.
Not if you're constantly proving.
I'm not doing it to berate.
Exactly.
I'm bringing some humor.
Or not to say, consistently say, I am so much righter than you that I'm going to put you on blast to 25,000 people.
No. I just try to bring information, just something that people don't get on Twitter. I just try to find something that I can bring that's unique and different, and then just run with that. And that's what I did with the quotes. And I use it as a vessel to get the articles out that I write, and that brings the content and brings information to the table. And that's pretty much it. That's it. I'm down for a conversation or chatting or talking basketball or whatever. That's it.
You know who you are on Twitter. That's it, man. You got to be comfortable in your own skin. It's an interesting medium like that. It kind of puts you out there and forces you to interact with other people.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Isn't that the guy that either does or did a Mavericks blog?
He was drunk. He was drunk.
Well.
He's funny, though.
Well. I guess that's it, isn't it?
That is it.
And, you know, until we just started riffing on DFW sports, we really stayed on time.
Pretty much, yeah, we did. I'm proud of that.
I have to do that every week.
Yeah, we probably should do that. It's better that way. Or we'll end up having a 4-hour. Oh, you missed, bro.
Yeah, it's hard angle from here.
Yeah, it is. That's depth perception. So, yeah, we'll have to figure out when we'll come back. Maybe sometime before the preseason gets rolling. Or maybe media day. Shortly after Media Day.
Yep, we got to recap Media Day.
Yeah.
That's an MOR tradition.
That'll be a good one.
Yeah. It's always good audio from Media Day and some Sean Marion laughs. I don't have Sean Marion laugh on here. How do I not have that?
My bad.
You've got one. You play it a lot.
We definitely won't have Roddy Bubois on Media Day.
Out of the league.
I think he is going to be out of the league.
Out of the league.
I will be shocked if he finds an NBA team.
My, how far the mighty have fallen.
Maybe Golden State will pick him up.
Out of the damn league.
Who knows?
Man, if that doesn't tell you everything you needed to know about that, nothing does.
So we'll be back. Media Day has not been officially announced on the date, but once we figure that out, we'll obviously give you the information of when that is. And you can find us on Twitter. You can find the... You should probably change your... Well, are you? Would you ever consider changing your name to the Twitter Critic?
No way. No way. I don't want to be a full...
Be comfortable in your skin, Rylan.
But I'm not... That's the thing. I'm not a full-time Twitter critic. Way. I'm just somebody who I think knows enough about good Twitter versus bad Twitter that I'm qualified to make a commentary on how people use it when they misuse it.
Gotcha.
And man, do some of these guys misuse it.
Gotcha. So you can find Rylan at Rylan Rowe, RHYLANROWE.
Tweet me.
Exactly. Tim, whoever, whenever he shows up, if he ever shows up, TAKOGER.
Yep.
I don't even remember when the last time he sent a tweet was.
He's got an infant, dude. She's like maybe not even 2 months old now. He's a very low quality.
He's a low-quality, high-volume tweeter.
I know some of those. He's a low-quantity, high-quality tweeter.
There it is.
And I want you guys to kick up with Ballin' with Brian on Twitter. Ballin' with Brian, B-R-Y-A-N. If you're looking for Mavs coverage, I mean, you're not going to find much better than him. And as he points out, he's got a very unique brand of content, and it won't be repetitive. It'll be valuable, useful. Good links to stories on Two Man Game, ESPN Dallas. You can get news on our podcast here.
For sure.
You're getting game commentary. You're getting post-game quotes and stuff. I mean, it's just good. Just good all the way around. This is a brother who understands Twitter. That's all it really boils down to.
I don't understand microphones. I don't understand. So we'll be back sometime in September-ish. We'll figure out when. Like I said, whenever we figure it out, we'll let you know. You can download the show on Podomatic. .com, P-O-D, oh, I struggled with spelling.
P-O-D-O-M-A-T-I-C, podomatic.com.
This is usually your part, too.
The easiest thing to do is just Google for Mavericks Outsider Report. Honestly, it'll take you to the podomatic.com link or to iTunes, which if you're an Apple user or just an iTunes user on a Windows PC, you can subscribe to our podcast for free. It'll automatically download to your device of choice or just to your computer if you listen on there, which is always good. You can also look for us on Ustream and get the unedited video, which today will be fun because it'll show me starting a new recording for the last, I don't know, 30 minutes or so of this podcast.
And you get Rylan's foot.
But the podcast itself will splice those together. Man, you'll barely know what happened.
So, like I said, you can find us there.
We still say splice, even though we haven't used cassettes in
ever. I would say splice.
Ever.
I would say splice.
It's where it originated.
You chop it up.
It's etymology, brother.
There you go. So, we will see you sometime in September. Until then.
When's camp start? Like, second week of October
or
something?
Yeah.
First week of October?
Yeah. So, Media Day will be shortly
Media Day will
that.
Be, yeah. And if we find some excuse to get together before then, we can.
Yeah.
So.
Maybe A-Rod actually becomes a centaur or minotaur. Or we figure out what DeJuan Blair's name actually is. We'll figure it out.
I can't wait to cut that one up.
That'll be a good one. This will be a good episode for you to chop up. Javon Bear. Someone needs to make a sign. I support Javon Bear.
Yes. And then the other guy calls him DeJuan Player.
Yeah.
DeJuan Player.
Player hater.
All right, gentlemen. Well, it's just one of us, one of you that I'm talking to. I guess I'm talking to the...
You're talking to the world.
World, too. It's a good show. It was fun. First half was so focused. The Mav section was so focused and on point, dude.
Once we got to the fun stuff, it got...
We just put the feet up on the desk and stopped recording. So, thanks for coming out. We appreciate you, as always. Look for us. Tell your friends. Talk to us on Twitter. We like interacting. We understand Twitter. Ain't no Twitter critic segment coming for Ballin' with Brian. He knows how to tweet. I'm Rylan. He's Brian.
See ya.
That's all I got.
I don't trust him. His name is Rylan.
If you guys, and as much as you could, if you could talk into the microphone, because it's a little hard to hear up here, so as best you could.
Is this good? Cool.
This is to Monte.